This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
This is Brightside Home Theater.
Do you have a list? Or are we flying by the seat of our pants, Dan?
A little bit of both.
Okay. Oh, yeah, so you have a slight agenda, but yeah. You're ready to just rip.
Well, it's not even slight agenda. It's just, you know, little talking points and all.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're a pro at this now.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Thanks for stepping up the other day. That was pretty quick. That was awesome.
Yeah. No problem.
That was awesome. I was trying to schedule something, and then I was like, you know what? Let me just try doing it this way, because it was just so hard to be like, I can only do it this time instead of asking all these people. I'm like, right. Why don't I just do this? Especially newer people that haven't done it yet. And I'm like, I'll just put it out. And I'm like, maybe that'll work. And went a lot quicker than I expected. So thank you.
It worked.
Yeah. Yeah. It was great. So, What's the first thing on your agenda? I don't want to put any spoilers. I've seen a bunch lately of content, but do you have any new stuff? Are you tweaking anything? I thought you said, did you mention something to me recently?
Yeah, and that was one of the things that I had, like, for theater updates and like that. So since the last time we spoke, which was, like, back in April or something like that, when I was on, mm-hmm. I think it was, like, around Mother's Day or something like that, because both had to get off. Since then, I've had, I think, three different receivers in and out, trying them.
For fun, did you have issues with each one?
No. The original one I had that I was trying to replace was, I was having problems with HDMI coming up with, like, green stripes every once in a while. I tried probably 5, 6, 7 or so new HDMI cables. I tried fiber optic ones. I tried gold plated ones. I tried, you know, and it still did it. So I said, okay, I'm guessing it's got to be the receiver, because I even changed out my source device.
Yeah, you went source directly to the display. And
yep.
Oh, wow. Yep.
And there was no problem. So, the AVR5, which is Arcam.
Oh,
I tried an Arcam. I love the display and everything like that, because it's large. I'm getting older, so it's nice that I can actually see it. And then I sent that back because my speakers are 4 ohm. And when you really turn it up, the Arcam doesn't handle, even though online it says it does with no problem. But I found otherwise that it doesn't like 4 ohm loads, because it probably drops below 4 ohm. So I sent that back. I went back to my original receiver and started looking, you know, researching other ones. I'm like, all right, well, let me try that, because I like the Arcam, and I use Dirac, so I've already paid for Dirac, so, you know, that's hundreds of dollars. I don't want to be out, so I kind of get stuck into that. So I went with an Arcam. I tried the 11 and the AVR 11, which is a new model this year also. It's a little out of my price range, so I tried it, and I figured if it's going to fix it, you know, I'm going to have this for a while, so I'll keep it. Still had the same problem with the 4 ohm load, so I had a five channel amp to go with it, so I would just do all the bass layer, and so that worked out fine. But I'm like, I'm not getting any more out of it than I did before, and for, you know, or being twice the price of the other receiver.
Yeah.
I sent that back.
Yeah. Where did you end up getting it?
Well, and I had one other one in between. I had a not an Onkyo, a what was it? The same brand as Onkyo. It's under United.
Oh, okay.
God, and I always forget the name of it. But
it left a lasting impression,
right? But it was the same. It's the same thing as the RZ. Was it the RZ 80? You think it is?
Okay.
The newest one that they had, and it just, like you had said, when you change from your receiver from your Denon over to Marantz, you yourself could hear something different.
Yeah.
And that was the same with me. It just sound to me. It just sounded like hollow. It didn't have the same oomph that RCAM had.
Yeah.
So I ended up going back to the RCAM AVR-10 and
just 10 or 11.
No, I went to a 10. So I went from 5 to 11 to a 10, which is just last year's model.
Oh, okay.
So because it's basically the same thing except for it doesn't have HDMI 2.1, which
right.
I don't do any of the gaming anyways. That's why I have a PC. So.
Yeah.
So I did that. Everything's working fine. Like I said, I like the looks of it because, you know,
it's
big and bright silver, as the rack. I just like it.
Yeah. It's the really RCAMs are slick looking. I like those.
Yeah.
I looked at them when I looked at RCAM. I looked at, and I didn't want to go to Dirac just yet. Right.
Yeah.
It's like, I knew, like I've said before, I wanted a sideways step in as far as room EQ so that it was just easily, so I could spend more time on content instead of learning Dirac, learning this, because from everything, right. For all I know, it would have been an easy step to do, but I don't know. And I didn't want, I wanted as little unknowns as possible to make this, to do my upgrade. But it's different in a situation like yours where you have an issue and it's like, all right, well, I'm forced into this. Let's have some fun with it. Right. And maybe in that situation, I would have been like, all right, let's go complete change here, especially where I had an issue with a product, but I had zero issues with my Denon. So I'm like,
right.
Why not just stay with that same company for all intents and purposes, but just get a legit upgrade here. So,
yeah.
But that's good. You like the RCAM. And it's like, now, like you said, that was a little outside your price range, but it was worth it.
Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah.
And the other one is called the Integra. That's what it was.
Okay.
That's
a good line, though, too.
But yeah,
just
I mean,
didn't it sound as good for you with your speakers?
Yeah, and it's, I like simplicity, you know. So you look at the front of that, and it's just, you know, all kinds of buttons. It hasn't been updated in a while, so the front of it still looked, you know, still looked kind of old.
Yeah,
it's not as sleek, like you said. That, you know, the RCAM, it's just the front. It's got a few buttons, and then just one big knob on it. That's
yeah,
which I like. I like simplicity.
Yeah. Yeah, it is nice. It's there's that I mean, even the like the Marantz with the single little thing. It's like it's not a big display. It's like, which I wish it was a little bit, because I always liked the word scrolling and stuff. And but it's just, again, it's the simplicity of it, and you just look at the front of that, and I don't know if it's just great marketing. And when you see this stuff and you're like, looks so simple, it must be great. Right. It's like, it's just got a knob. Oh, that must mean it's great because all the work's being done behind the scenes.
Right.
When I was a kid, though, I loved tons of buttons.
Same with me. I mean, I just got rid of a Sony receiver that I had. It was like it only did like 7.1, you know, HD audio. That was it. Didn't do any Atmos or like that. And you turn it around in the back, you know, has got all kinds of inputs, you know, a couple of HDMI, but it had just a whole bunch of RCA inputs and coax, and, you know, too many. I don't have that many things to plug in.
Not anymore. Yeah.
I don't need it.
Yeah. And it is kind of funny when you look at the back of a receiver now and all of the stuff that's back there, and you're like, really? You could just HDMI is across the board. It's like, I kind of wish that there was like a cheaper version, but it wouldn't be cheaper because there are people that do utilize that stuff. So they have to, that's the idea. It's all in one. And to make a sleeker version, we know what we're doing anyways, but it is, it's like compared to the way it was 20 years ago and you had different, how many different inputs? We had composite, component, super video.
S-video.
Yeah. It's
ridiculous.
Toslink, what do they call it? Yep. Yeah, it's all of that stuff. And then don't forget, you got to put your little FM antenna on the side and wire that up the wall.
That's right.
My Sony receiver that I still have that I used in the 90s, it had the left and right graphic. So like when when anything was playing, I saw that in my stereo rack next to the 32-inch TV, and you could look there and you'd see the left and right channels going up and down, up and down. Oh, and you were like, look at that. It knows when there's something going through the channel. Wow, look at that.
Yep. So simple things that make us smile. That's all.
Yeah, it's, instead of watching the TV itself, you're watching the front of the receiver.
Yeah, I find myself doing that too. I'm looking at the TV and I'm looking down. Okay, yeah, it's an Atmos. Okay, it actually still is there. So.
Yeah, I do that on my phone. I have to, because everything's in the closet, so I pull up the app on the phone and go, yep, Atmos, 4K. As a matter of fact, I was watching, I got 3/4 of the way through Rogue Nation. I thought I was listening to Atmos the whole time. It's not on Kaleidoscape. It's just DTS 5.1. But it sounded, I was like sitting there, I'm listening to it. I'm enjoying it. It's, the bass is incredible. I'm like, the surround, everything is just full room engagement. And then I was like, I think I went down and I was like, oh, what are we in? I'm like, yes, let me check. So then I had to go online. I'm like, oh yeah, it is just DTS. I just assumed, I don't know, but yeah, it was, and that's how I found out. It was like, everything's on my phone. So,
but yeah, I think it's funny. Cause you were saying that like about Christopher Nolan, you know, and you know, everything's in 5.1. And one of the, one of the things I remember was, I think it was Fast and Furious 5, I think it is, that has, that's only HD audio also. Mm-hmm. But man, I could get that thing rocking too. It just, I like Atmos, but it's, I don't have to have it to enjoy the movie.
No.
You know? I mean, it's,
no, I think, honestly, if you were to do some blind tests, especially where you're doing, like, well, look at you, Coca-Cola commercial in the glass bottle. Look at you go.
I did that for you and John when you're talking about it.
Yeah.
Because I agree 100%. That's what I've always liked, too.
Oh, yeah. You had the bottle opener. Damn it all. Yep. I got to go.
I got four of them. I got one for you.
Oh.
I got one for me, I got one for John, and then a spare in case there was someone else. But I'll drink all four of them.
There you go. All right. The way you held that up to the camera, I was like, you little bastard. Do you have the Coke machine to go with it, or do you just get the bottles?
No, I just got the bottles.
Where did you get them?
Oh, you can. I got these at Shaw's. You can get them right at Shaw's.
Oh, I got to get some. Yeah. I got to get, oh, man. Taking me way back. What were we saying? That's okay. That was fantastic. Now I wish it was a video podcast because everybody, I'm like, you held that up perfectly to the camera. And I was like, you like popped the top of it. Oh, that was great. Thank you.
I think we're talking about just DTS.
Oh, yeah.
You know, how we don't have to have Atmos on.
Yeah. I think if you were to do blind testing on that, I'm like, you know, you put somebody in the room and say, okay, I'm going to play a track for you and be like, what is this? You can't tell, especially nowadays with our upmixing and everything. But it's like, you would not be able to tell, oh, that's this one. Okay, now let me play you this one. Oh, that's this one. And, you know, now if you went back and forth, like I have a DTS 5.1 Jurassic Park and I have a DTS:X Jurassic Park and you flip them back and forth. Yeah, you're going to tell a difference there, but of course they've remastered it. They've upgraded it and that it's a different story. But yeah, it's you. Like I said, I went all the way through almost all the way through Rogue Nation. And I was like, wow. I'm like, I thought the whole time I was listening to Atmos and it wasn't.
And so. Did it change your experience from, from the beginning to when you noticed it? No, you still enjoyed it.
Actually, it enhanced it. I was like, wow, this is incredible. I was like, this sounds awesome. And it does.
Yep.
That's such an awesome, awesome disc, awesome movie to watch. And we were talking about it on Twitter when SVS, when Mike Schramm got his speaker, and then SVS mentioned, you know, Rogue Nation. I was like, oh my God, it's so funny. But that they mentioned that after it, I'd already put it in my notes for Friday's podcast and stuff. But it is kind of funny. Like I said online on Twitter, like the Mission Impossibles are so engrossing. They're such great action movies, but they're so engrossing because you know that there's a lot of stuff going on that you're going to get, that's going to get revealed to you at the end. So that dialogue is super important. But at the same time, there's so much action and great music and everything going, all of that just spilling out into your room. But you need that clarity. And it's kind of funny that they mentioned that. But it is one of those, it's an entire series of movies that you're like, I mean, I think the Bond movies are much like
that
too.
That's the only one I haven't seen. I haven't seen Rogue Nation.
Oh,
yeah. I've seen all the other ones. I really enjoyed it when they added Simon Pegg to the cast.
Yeah,
because I just think he's just funny. He's just got a good sense of humor that he brings.
Yeah, he's he brings almost like the comic relief, but. Mm-hmm. But he also, like, his character too, the way they have him, like, he's still like a quote field agent, but he's more of a normal person, not the superhero that Ethan Hunt is. Right.
Right.
You know, so he's just like, I can't do this. And it's just funny watching them play off of each other, really. So,
yeah.
But yeah,
that's, I mean, yeah, the dynamics between them, it's just good.
Yeah. Yeah. And, Ving Rhames too. Haven't gone all the way through. I think what I'm going to end up doing is going backwards through the series, because I obviously have Top Gun Maverick, and then I was like, oh, let me try a Mission Impossible. So I went with the latest one. And then I was like, when I was done with that, like this past week, I'm like, I got to do another one. So I was like, all right, I'll do Rogue Nation. And I was like, I might as well just keep on going all the way back through, and I'll just go backwards through them for some reason. It's such a fun series. He makes such great movies.
He really does. I mean, it's also good that, you know, he does a lot of his own stunts and you know, driving and all that stuff. So you can see, you know, like in Maverick, like you keep saying, you know, they're actually in the planes, and you can see the stress on their face. I mean, there's no way to reenact that. That is the real thing.
No. Have you seen that?
Which is great.
Did you see that one of the extras where I keep wanting to call them pilots when I talk about this, but with the actors, and they're like, we're not acting. That's us just trying to be in that cockpit and trying to stay conscious and not throw up. And you see that when you hear them say that, and they were like, and you hear the disbelief in them when they first started, they were like, I just thought we were going to be like, in the movie, I didn't think we were actually going to be. They say that we're gonna be in the planes, but you're like, yeah, they'll take you up to give you a little bit of a feel. He goes, oh no, we just shot those scenes, which has to be, that has to be incredible to be like, all right, let's get another take. And you're like, oh, here we go again. I've got to do this again. Yep. Right. And it's like, just think of that. It's one thing to stand in a room and go, can we get that with a little bit more feel? Now you're telling the jet to go.
It's not just a one shot, you know, okay, it's done. We're going to do this over and over. So.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so incredible. And that's why I think like that IMAX enhanced or the IMAX experience on that with their faces and getting that, you really need to have that larger screen, right? Like if you have a wide scope screen and you go down to smaller, you're really losing a lot in that case. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, just because it's meant to be taller than the original shot that you were just watching. And when you actually go smaller, it's, you know, or I don't, I've seen how some people are doing it online with their CinemaScopes, which it's weird. It is a difficult thing, I guess, it's incredible. It's so well shot. And that's what got me to watch the first to watch that Mission Impossible because it said it was a variable aspect ratio.
And yeah,
that one wasn't very good. It only had the two scenes in it. So, but
yeah, this one bounces back and forth a couple times.
Quite a few. And it makes you want more, right? It's like every time it happens, you're like, yeah. And then when they go away from it, you're like, all right. I can't. But you understand, you're not taken out of the movie because it's all dialogue and stuff. And so it's no big deal. But yeah, I'm talking with Todd Anderson and he's going to come on. We're going to do a Top Gun breakdown and stuff. And he goes, are you sure you haven't done too much? No such thing. I'm like, I don't care.
There's always
like,
more.
I just what I want to talk about. If you don't want to, if people don't want to hear it, they don't have to listen to that part. Or
right.
I might put it out as its own thing. I don't know. Speaking of which, I might end up having to do that anyways. Friday's podcast, yesterday's podcast was almost four hours long.
I know. I have like 20 minutes left on it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And I had trouble uploading it. Because the network I'm on, you're only supposed to upload at a certain kilobyte.
Yeah.
I had to go under that to get it to fit because you can only upload X amount of megabytes. So I had to shrink the file. I couldn't get it to upload. And that's why it ended up coming out early is I was having so much trouble with it and trying to schedule it. I'm like, screw it. I finally got it to work and it went out. And I'm like, it just leave it out instead of scheduling because normally I do everything on a Wednesday or Thursday and scheduled it to come out on now it's been midnight, but I was just happy it worked, so I'm like put it out, so it went out again on Thursday night 2 weeks in a row. But
I was wondering if that was a new thing. I mean, because like Rob and Tom they're coming out early now and you're coming out. I'm like,
no,
what's going on?
Yeah, no, you guys
are trying to find out who can get it out first.
No, not at all. No, the week before I happened to be out and I was excited about the Dolby versus and people were asking about it. So that's why I put it out. Like Omar had said something, other people, people I hadn't even known about before were asking about it. So I was like, you know what? Let me put it out. So I put out that little poll and I'm like, screw it. Let's just put it out and have some fun. So that's why I did that one. I really like being on schedule and like that everybody knows something's coming on Friday, because I've had in my old podcast, we used to put stuff out a little bit early just because same reason, but then people would email me looking for the podcast but it had been out for 2 days. Yeah. Right. And it's like, it's just that they didn't say it was supposed to come out on Thursday, but it came out on Tuesday, but they weren't looking in their podcast aggregator. Right.
Yeah, schedule.
Yep. On Tuesday, they didn't see it. And now on Thursday, when they went to look for it, it's not there. It's just further down. So I'm like, nope, it's there. Go and look. So I'm a big proponent of like on time, same time, all the time. Sometimes things happen and I'd rather be a little early, but.
Right. Cause a lot of us, you know, look forward to that. Like on Friday mornings, I'm like, all right, let's see. If it's only a half hour to work today, you know, I'll listen to part of, you know, either part of your show or AV Rant or lots of time I'll just do HD Guys because there's usually shorter. So I usually just listen to that on the way to work. And on the way home, I'll either put on AV Rant or your show to drive home. But now that AV Rant's, you know, coming on Thursdays, I listen to that on my way home from work and I just pick it up, you know, in the morning. So it just changed my schedule a little bit, but it is nice to look, you know, have something to look forward to, you know, okay. EJ's coming out on Tuesday and on Friday.
Yeah. Yep. So what I might end up doing is where I'm getting all of these segments now. I'm supposed to be talking with Todd. I'm sorry, not Todd. Yeah. Todd about Maverick, Jeff from HD Report, him and I are still working, trying to do Lord of the Rings stuff. And now we have, you know, Rings of Power dropping. We want to we still want to do Return of the King. We want to do, and I'm like, hopefully.
Which is my favorite. Return of the King is my favorite one. So
hopefully we'll be getting to that soon, but to try and tie all these into the podcast, the podcasts are going to be so long. I think what I might end up doing is John and I will do our podcast. And then as these things come out, I'll just produce them and put them out as is. And I can produce a pod and it'll just be an additional podcast a week. when it's there, right? If not, right. You know, special event or something like that. But it's I'm happy about it. I'm psyched to be able to do it. And it's like, I mean, because it's like you think about the podcast that I just put out, this 4 hours long, and it's like I could have done Kaleidoscape on its own.
Yeah.
And then left that out on its own. But and
that was really good. I mean, having Jake on there. No, Luke. Yeah.
Luke. Yeah, Luke. Use the force, Luke. Yeah, he's awesome.
It's awesome. It is, and it's funny because you know, that was just like a Scott Wilkinson type of thing, because that's what he would do with his podcast at the time. You know, have people come on from like Kaleidoscape or Kaleidoscope. Sorry,
no, Escape.
And,
you're right.
Oh, it's Escape. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. And or SVS. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just cool that you're not doing the same thing as him, because you mix a lot of other stuff in. But it's nice to be able to hear from, you know, manufacturers, and it's nice that they're recognizing you as, you know, being an important part of of their, you know, whole ecosystem. So,
yeah, it's. Well, I think I'm the one of the conduits to the DIY community, right? Same as, I mean, kind of like that is our community. Which is really, to me, that's the heart of home theater, of the home theater community. It's like, there are, like, and we've said it before, there are people that just, they pay the money to have like I said, I have a friend that is like that. He's not really into home theater, but he's got a home theater that, like, would rival mine. But he doesn't have a clue on what it is. No clue whatsoever. The whole thing was built for him. Everything goes, and it all just works. And it's like, you know, it's like you buy
it's all that matters.
It's like the rich guy that bought the Ferrari. He doesn't know about cars. He doesn't even know which end the engine's in. He doesn't
care. He doesn't know how to drive it.
Right. Like, I don't care. And it's like, do you know why the engine's back there? Do you get the balance? Do you get what that means to the car? No, I just liked red. Oh, okay.
That just reminds me of Ford versus Ferrari when. The guy comes back to the shop, you know, it doesn't run at all now. And he's like, Christian Bale's like, because you're not driving it the way it's supposed to be driven.
Right.
You don't know what you have.
Yeah. I bought I have a Mazda RX-8, 2005 Mazda RX-8. I wanted a Mustang. And this was back in, I bought mine in 07. And then I one of the dealers I was at, the guy, they happened to have a silver RX-8 on the lot. And I took it out, for a test drive. I was just, let me screw around in it. So I went out for like 20 minutes in it. And I'm like, fun. I'm sitting on the floor. I'm sitting on the road. It's like a little go-kart. The engine, for all intents and purposes, it's a mid-engine car, because the engine's between the wheels, the way it's situated.
Yeah, it's a Wankel engine.
It is a Wankel. Design. Yeah, it's the rotary engine. I love that aspect of it. But come to find out, as I'm like forming my opinion here and trying to, and getting pulled away from the Mustang and going, wow, this thing is I didn't even realize, I thought the thing moved anyways when I was test driving it. Then I found out I didn't even drive it right.
Yeah, when you bring it up to 10,000-11,000 RPM instead of 5. Yeah,
I drove it like a normal car, and I'm like, this thing's got some nice kick. You drive or sing around at, like, I mean, you're redlining at 9,500 RPM, I think it is, something like that. So you're driving it between, you know, 5,500 and 8,500, and you're still not even using the engine really hard.
Right.
And this thing, it moves, and it sounds fun. It's just, I mean, once I learned that, you take it out, and you're like, holy crap, you get on the, you know, on-ramps are a blast. And
right.
But again, to your point, it's like knowing how to drive the car or each individual car. It's different. But that's what people are like that with home theater. Like I said, I'm like, the DIY guy is the heart of home theater. We know these things inside and out. We know, you know, the engines that make these things go. We like to tinker like you're doing with your receivers. And I think, like, especially for Kaleidoscape, I said this with, I said it with Brett. I'm like, they're not really big into the DIY market, because they never needed to be. I don't think they need to be, but it is it's a market that they can get into, where it's like, hey, you know, there are a bunch of guys out there that aren't even familiar with this, because it was priced so high for so long.
Right.
that it wasn't even, and the DIY guy's like, I'll do Plex, right? And they mess around with
that. I have.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, I got Plex and it works perfectly fine. I mean,
yeah. And it does. But then when you get to a point in your life, you're like, oh, maybe I could afford that and I could try that. And it's like, you talk to these people and it's like, instead of just being dealer run and everything like that, you know, reach out. And I think that's what they're doing. I'm not suggesting. I just think I happen to be the conduit. They're like, well, maybe we'll try this thing. And they're talking to guys like us and AV Nirvana and DIY conduits like us.
Because who knows? I mean, they may not. I'm sure they have because they're not a huge company, but they're a big enough company where they would probably, you know their market and say, you know, oh, well, you know, there's a DIY community out there that this, you know, this would intrigue some of these people that may have, you know, the funds to be able to buy something like that.
Yeah. What I think is interesting is one of their biggest, obviously not one of, the biggest hurdle for us is price, right?
That's it. Yeah. Right.
But what's interesting about their market is they had the Strata S players that you could still get online. You can still get them on eBay and stuff like that. But they're not selling them anymore because they found that because of their market, and I heard about this, I think it was through Brett, but their market was like, nobody really cared about the cheaper version. Right. And like that entry level version that would get you in. And it was like, no, they found it was like, it's the speed. It was the convenience. It's like to save when you're up that high to save a couple thousand dollars, right? Get the speed and just run that. So why would they produce it's? And like we were saying about the receivers and all those things on the back of them, because you kind of want to make just let's produce one thing and produce that well, instead of to run a production on something that might not sell that well, just so people can get it and go, you know what? And this is what I believe they found. People were getting the Strata S and they were like, this is great. I just wish it was faster. So then they sold them online and bought the Terra anyways. And now Kaleidoscape's sitting there going, why don't we just do the Terra? Because that's what everybody's getting anyways. And I guess the counter to that would be, yeah, but maybe some people wouldn't be getting the Terra because they hadn't tried this S yet. But there's probably enough S's out there now anyways that they, you know, you can get one if you want one. But yeah, I love it. I love everything that they're doing. Actually, I can't wait for the new product. There's no any new product on the way that I know of. I just know that how they've done things, just like anybody else. Like if SVS came out with a whole new lineup of speakers, wouldn't we all be like, wait, what? You're going to better what you already have? All right. I can't wait to see that.
Well, that's what they did with the Pinnacle and that.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's what it's called. The SVS.
Is that what it is? Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, anytime something new comes out, you're like, all right, I can't wait. Just can't wait. The new line of receivers, new line of projectors, displays, anything. You come out with something new, everybody wants to know. So I'm excited. I'm really excited.
Yeah. Every time you talk about it, I was thinking, well, one of these days, you know, I will have, you know, get one of those. Just not right now.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
I mean, plus, you know, I have a small TV, but you know, it's 85 inch. I would like to be able to have that on a, on a large projection screen.
Yeah.
Or something that's at least 100 inches or 110 inches, which it looks like it's going to be going that way very soon.
Oh, nice. What do you think of?
Well, I'm still trying to think of either a short throw projector, which is because I got a small room, I don't really have a lot of space. And I don't know if having a, you know, like an Epson, was it 50-50 UB or whatever?
Yeah.
If I'll have enough
throw distance to get
for it to be, you know, over, you know, I mean, if I can only get 90 inches on the screen, I already have an 85. That's
right. Yeah. Why go to all the trouble for five more inches?
Right.
But with a ultra short throw, you can get a lot. Yeah. I mean, the sky's the limit, really. It's right. Like in a smaller room like that. It's really limited to what your wall space is at that point.
Right.
You know,
and it's funny that we're talking about that because I have a cheap projector and I just one I bought for my daughter for 1 year when she was having a birthday party. So they run outside. So I bought this cheap thing online. It works just fine. But I bought a screen. I was going to actually, you know, just do some testing just to see what it would look like to have, you know, 100-inch screen, you know, and be able to fill it up.
Yeah, it's, that's part of the fun too. Is get it, it, you know, the size it gives you that experience that it's not, there's no substitute,
right?
You know, I mean, I love an OLED, I love the detail, but there's just no substitute for that large seat, that, you know, that all encompassing field of view that just, and now right. I know everybody, well, you could get closer. But to me, it's always been like, if you sit closer, you know you're sitting closer, right? And to me, that...
And it looks odd, too. You walk into a room and your chair, you know, your couch is only 3 feet from your screen. I mean, it just looks...
Yeah,
looks
and odd. You're like, my feet could touch the front wall, but I have that... It's just, it's a different feeling to sit further back and still have that huge experience, right? It's like, that, to me, is part of the environment. And that's why I, like, when I designed my room... And even the next room will be designed. I sit in the second row because I want that theater going to the theater experience. I never sit in the front row of my, when I go to, you never sit in the front row when you go to the movies.
Right.
It's like, you know,
I only have once because I really wanted to see the movie.
Yeah.
And it was Guardians of the Galaxy and I'm sitting in IMAX and I'm just going like this. And it wasn't fun at all. And I'll never do it again.
No, it hurts your neck and you're panning back and forth with your head. And it's like, I did it as a kid and it was funny back when I did it. It was before they had stadium seating. It's everybody was on the same floor level. And you were like, so you're sitting in the front. You're like, what the? Oh, it was awful. But now, so when I built my theater, I was like, nope, the prime seating is going to be right here. If I want to, I can put my feet up on the back of that chair as long as nobody's sitting in front of me. I can do whatever I want to do. I can recline. Yeah. But I'm like, the prime seat will always have a couple of seats in front of me just to give me that vantage point. Like I'm looking over another set of rows, you know?
Yeah.
But that's me. There are other people. I've seen theaters where it's just a single chair in the middle. It's just a screening room. And that's awesome because you're like, this is it. It's just me. Why would I waste the money on other chairs?
Right.
You know, and I just love, even though it's just me, I want to have those chairs around me. So I feel like I'm at the theater, like on a rainy day when I'm at work now, I'm in the theater all by myself. So, I got to get you over here.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I heard you on the podcast, you know, I wish we all kind of lived closer together. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about?
I know. I'm literally, well, now that you're here,
20 minutes away.
Now that you're on, it's like every time I say that, I'm like, I keep thinking of you, and I'm like, I know. I'm like, because we gotta hook up. I'll come there. You come here. We could do that. And I do have a plan. And now that you're here, I can tell the plan. It's like, I can tell with more detail. I think I've said it a little bit, but what I've already told my son. When we that's the thing is. We haven't had any rain. We haven't had a lot of rain. So like if I get I work like the 6 days, but if I had a rainy Saturday and I saw it coming, like we see the weather is going to be crap. Like say next Saturday, you look at the 7 day forecast rain. All right. Maybe. And by Wednesday, they're like, yeah, this weekend's going to be a washout. And I know I'm not working. I'll be like, Dan, what are you doing? And I already told my son, I'm like, instead of us going to work, you're coming with me. And he's going to video and we'll do an HT tours together.
Okay.
And he'll videotape it. And I already have like lavalier mics and stuff. So I just got to test them out. I've never used them before. I just bought them for this purpose like a year ago. And I'm like, we'll do that. And then you and I could sit down and we'll record a podcast. We'll record afterwards. And I'll have the HT tours. R and I will put that out. And then I'll put out a podcast of visiting with you. And then, you know, next time. And then you can come here. And I don't know if we could do it that day. We'll probably be busy trying to figure all that out. But I thought that would be fun. And I'm like,
it would be.
I told Ara all about it. And he's like, yeah. And he goes, then maybe I could come out there. I'll fly out and maybe we'll do another one for somebody out there. And then you could come out here. I'm like, yeah. And I was like, who knows where this could go? I'm like, but it's fun. It's like, funny. There's people in the area, especially. I know there are people around here.
And it's funny because you're flying out and things like that. When I flew out to California and I stopped in Chicago for our layover, and that's when I think it was
was it Mike Omar?
Yeah, they went to Mike Johnny. Yeah, Mike and Omar. Yeah, and I'm like, you know, how come you guys didn't tell me? You know, if I'd known, I'm right here. And then Ara came out to see you, and I'm like, I said, isn't it with you guys too? I work in Newton. You guys were in Boston. I could have drove another 10 minutes.
I know. What was funny about even me and R and I meeting up, it was, we had talked about it for months, but then it was, I even offered him, I'm like, hey, you could come out to the house. I was like, I didn't know what their schedule was, but he was like, no, my daughters wanted to go down to Hershey, Pennsylvania. They wanted to make it. So, I mean, they were like, that was one of the things talked about at dinner that night when we were hanging out. I'm like, you guys aren't on vacation. You're working harder than I work when I'm at work. It's like, because every day they was like, what'd you do today? They did the Freedom Trail. They did the aquarium. They did everything. Like, they take it all in. They experience the areas. And that's what they do as a family, which I thought was great.
Is cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't it? And I'm like, my wife's like, I want to go away with the kids. And I'm like, and my kids are older now, like Ara's kids. And I'm like, they could go with us. But I'm like, look, and there's nothing against that. But I work outside all day long. I'm on my feet all day long. I'm running, I'm always moving, always doing stuff. When I go on vacation, I don't want to do that stuff.
Right.
So I'm like, I want to go, like, my favorite vacation is when we went to Aruba. And we've been twice, and I go and it's just a long weekend. We fly out like on Thursday and come back on Sunday. But it's like, you get up in the morning and you just get your chair and sit on the beach.
Right.
The bar opens at 11. You do it again the next day. And
That's what I told my girlfriend. I said, the next time we go on vacation, just her and I said, I want to go someplace where I don't really like the beach, but it is a nice, comfortable, you know, relaxing place. I just want to stick my feet in the sand and just sit there. Because we went to California, we were driving up and down, you know, the PCH, and we went all over. It wasn't a lot of downtime.
Yeah.
I just like
to just sit and do nothing. That's a vacation to me.
Yeah.
It's like that. And it's like, if we take the kids, they're going to want to be entertained, or let's go do this. Let's rent Jeep. Like, we went with our neighbors once. There were like 8 of us that went down, and it was like, okay, let's rent Jeeps and go do this day. And then let's do this day. And I'm like, I want to sit down. I just want to sit down and do nothing. I mean, there's a compromise. I mean, we want to get out. I haven't been away in a while. But we'll get away. Things are starting to shape up a little better. So, for me, anyways. Right.
So we'll get back into
home theater. Bring us back, Dan. What do we got?
Right. All right. So, let's see. I'm looking at my little list over here because we're talking about updates. So, like in my theater, so we had the receiver.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, this way I got an old house. Mm-hmm. So it still had knob and tube wiring. So I actually replaced some of that and ran new wiring, got all that taken care of in the theater area itself. Added some sconces with
some
colored bulbs that, you know, I can just
like a Hue lighting color system.
These ones are actually, these are this is thanks to Ara. And Braden,
I went on stuff.
They were talking about the Broadlink BLE on one of their podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
I happened to be going to one of the sites that I take care of, and right in the parking lot. I'm like, all right, Broadlink BLE. I look it up. Okay, this is a starter kit. Ordered it just like they said. came in. It's got, so I got that lighting. It's got a little, I don't even have to turn them on or anything. I can just, it's got a little, like remote button. I just got four different scenes, three different scenes, and one is off. So I walk in the theater, I push a button. Okay. I got Celtics green. I got, you know, like bright in case we're, I'm eating in there or something like that. And then I got like a soft hue or something like that. But, so I added some more lighting because all I had in there was a, I have a Wyze light strip that goes above my TV.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of hard to explain because my TV is like set into like a cabinet, but it's a built-in cabinet.
Yeah, it's into the wall, like it's right. Framed out of the wall. Yep.
And I got to tell you, Tom is right on painting a room black because my entire room is black. All of it, 100% black. The ceiling's black. You turn a light on. Guess what? It's still dim in there.
Yeah.
There's no reflection.
Nope.
At all. None. So that's why I had to add those sconces to try and get just a little bit more light in there.
Right. It's amazing how that is the best example of like why calibration is important. It's how light is. Like how your room affects the lighting and everything. It's like, that's the extreme right there. You're talking about the extreme. Let's make everything black. Let's see what happens to the environment. What's the ambience of the room now? And you're like, you're putting on the same light, but it's like, and to the point that, Mike Schramm and I were talking about the other day, sound is much of the same way. Okay. So that's a really good example now that I think of it. Your whole room's black, so when that one light comes on, everything that goes into those walls, it just like disappears. It doesn't bounce back at you.
Right.
Okay. That's how you want your room to be for sound too, right? So when you, anything coming out of that speaker, you want it to just come at you from that speaker. You want the rest of the room to be dead. And that's the idea of how our systems are working. It's like, that's why it's now take it down to say you painted your walls like a bluish color or a lighter blue, right? That's still that you're still having an effect on the light and your perception of the screen. And that's why it's minor compared to that big jump to black. But that's where a calibration comes in, because the calibration tools that the calibrator is using is taking, it's looking at the image and it's taking how that image is being perceived and it's adjusting it accordingly. So if it's getting if it's getting a little extra blue because of your blue walls, it's going to compensate for that in that room.
Right.
Whereas if you took my projector right now where you've seen my walls, I have them kind of royal blue walls. If you took that projector and you put it into a room that's just a neutral gray wall, I don't think you'd say it looked a little too or a little less blue, but you would, I bet you compared to another projector in that room, you would see that maybe the blues were off a little bit, you know, if you put calibration tools on it. And that's getting into like, really is the nitty gritty, but that's that minor adjustment there. But like you said, your room being all black, that's a big, that's the extreme and that's the difference. And like you said, I need more lights to get more light in there because you're not having any light bouncing around. And that's kind of what we want out of speakers too.
Right.
That's cool. That's cool.
We'll talk about that. So with sound treatment then, I built these corner traps and I'm guessing they work fine because they were filled with insulation, things like that, but they just didn't look, they weren't aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah.
So I had some 2x4, rectangles that I got from, I think they're from Gick a few years ago. You're only 2-inch padding in them. But I have 6 or 8 of them, but I used 4 of them just to put, in the corner. I took the corner base strap out, took all the insulation out. I put these in the corner so they go from one side of the one wall to the other.
Gap behind it.
Yep. And I just filled the gap up with the insulation that I had in the trap that I made. Now it's nice and straight. It goes up and so more aesthetically pleasing now.
Yeah. And then when you turn the lights out, it all looks the same anyways.
Exactly. Exactly right. Yep. And I went, there's still more updates on my theater. I had I used to just have black curtains, mm-hmm. you know, because I have two huge windows that they have the old, you know, they have not old, but they have crank out windows. But so I just, you know, if I wanted to get any sunlight, you know, during the day or whatever, just so it's not a black room. Plus, both sides of the curtain are black on the back of the house. Just absorbed all that sun, and that room just got so hot.
Yeah.
So I took those all down, and I bought some large, you know, specifically made for this room blinds. So it's just one big blind that goes up on either side, but side is kind of funny because you look at it and you're like, that's not going to block any light at all, but
yeah.
These are room darkening. These are four room darkening.
Yeah.
And the back is white. So on the outside, it doesn't get hot in the room anymore.
Right. It reflects the light away, but then the inside is dark to make the room darkening. And I was going to say that, like, you can do the same thing by putting, like, why people put up, like, tinfoil and stuff. And it reflects the light away. Instead of absorbing it and turning it into heat, it actually makes it bounce away.
Right.
So, cool.
So, yeah. So now I get new shades from there. Plus, it just looks a lot cleaner. I don't have these, you know, big curtains hanging down and covering the radiator. Well, you know, the heating.
Yeah.
And all
the you did what you had to do to get by, and now, you know, you cleaned it up a little bit and went more professional with actual blinds and stuff, and pretty much how our theaters evolve, right?
Yep.
Start out with 7 car speakers, and look at where we are today.
There you go, with boxes that you made yourself. And...
yeah, exactly. That's a real speaker. I made it.
I think the last update I did is my TV is a Sony TV, so it has the Android TV on it.
Mm-hmm.
But I also have a Shield Pro, which is Android.
Okay.
So I figured, well, I have two of the same thing. So I took out the Shield, and I bought a Apple 4K. And that's, I'm not a huge Apple fan just because.
So what made you do that then? Just wanted to try it?
Yeah, I just wanted to try it. And
see what all the hubbub was about?
Exactly. And plus, I had done this one other time, but. It was like $200 for an Apple 4K, and at Best Buy last weekend it was like $129. So I'm like, all right, I'll give it another shot. Pretty good discount, so.
Yeah. So what do you think of it so far?
I like it. Because you know, you guys are always talking about buying your videos on iTunes and things like that, or their iMovie, whatever it's called now.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's another thing that happened. I looking at all my discs in front of me, I'm like, you know what? I haven't really done anything with the digital code. So one night I just started opening up cases. Okay, let's see if scan this code. Okay, this one works. Okay, this I just put them all into iTunes. I moved everything out of Vudu, you know, for the Movies Anywhere, and it moved over to iTunes, and I bought a couple of movies while I was in there. And I mean, it seems nice because it's a lot different than using Vudu. Because like I was looking at, what was the movie? Yeah. Even Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, but you can go to a certain chapter and it plays just that chapter. It's not like you're starting from that chapter. It's like you can,
just
watch that one chapter, which is I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah, like a scene select type thing.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Is that where you got Maverick? Is that you bought Maverick on there?
Yeah, I bought Maverick, but I bought Maverick from Voodoo.
Oh.
Because I bought it when it first came out, and I just did this, you know, last week.
I've had, still new. I have a Voodoo account. I have an iTunes account. Had to be a couple of years ago. I had a Fire TV going. I had a Roku going. I had an Apple TV going. Some of this was before I even had a podcast. I was just, that's what I would do. I just wanted to see, where am I getting the best quality? That's why I would jump around from cable TV to satellite TV. And then when internet started coming out, I remember one of the first internet programs I watched was a football game that they streamed. The NFL streamed it. It was on a Sunday morning. And I'm like, oh, I got to check this out. It was a European game when they were over in Europe. And it looked spectacular. And that's kind of what I mean by, like, when I recommend it to everybody, like, if you're a fan of Maverick, I'm like, just take it in digital, because that's how I would learn. That's how I experience, like, the difference between dish television and cable television, and then seeing internet. It's like, when you take in so much content over and over and over, you expect your eyes and ears are expecting a certain thing. And then when you jump to something else, you'll be like, oh, there's the difference.
Yeah.
But if you're actually told to sit down and look for something, it's a lot harder to do. You have to, you know, I mean, trust me, when you see Maverick on disc compared to digital, it's not that hard to see here. But it's that everyday use that you're really going to notice the differences. And if I had to right now go back to cable TV of what I was watching before compared to what streaming is now today, you would see that big difference. But it was over the years, and that's what made me jump. Like, I hated cable TV, but Dish didn't have HD at the time. So I went over to that. And then once Dish got it, I went back because I knew satellite television had better video and audio quality. And it's, the same thing. But I did it with Voodoo. I was trying to see, some of them, like, you would get Atmos on Voodoo, but you didn't get the Atmos on the iTunes. And then to get Atmos, like, just trying to get Atmos on a Fire Stick from some of the Amazon shows that John and I have talked about that. John and I were pulling our hair out. And like I said, this is before I had a podcast. We're like, have you figured it out yet? I'm like, I got it for like 10 minutes. And they were like, I don't know how I did it, but it was so finicky. But yeah, I've done all of that stuff. And it everything seems to have kind of settled down. Like, everything's pretty much the same now as far as, you know, Voodoo. You don't see any differences in Voodoo, or did you notice any drop or increase in quality between iTunes and Voodoo?
Nope. Different the audio and video are the same, just the how you use it was, you know, just a little differences, you know, the UI, that was it.
Yeah. I mean, I did, I'd say the last streaming comparison I did was The Batman on HBO Max and the iTunes version. So I was obviously going Kaleidoscape, HBO Max, and iTunes, and HBO Max was the worst. iTunes wasn't as bad as HBO Max, but it's still streaming, and it wasn't as good, but it's not as good as the physical disc, but that you could see the difference. And I didn't know if there was any difference like that between Voodoo and iTunes, because I would think that iTunes has got to be, Apple's got to be trying to do something. Just try to be ahead of the game, right? Because they have their hardware and they're putting out the software through iTunes. So you'd think they'd want to try to bump the quality somehow over Voodoo to get you to buy their product and buy the movies through them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But
Voodoo's trying to do the same thing. They want to, you know, they want you to come to them and buy stuff. So it's good for us if they can
absolutely,
you know, try to fight it out and who's going to have the best quality.
Right. And that's what people say about the Kaleidoscape. That's all over the internet. It's like people are like, oh, well, I could do this on Apple and Apple's going to be this good someday. Okay. Well, what do you think Kaleidoscape's going to do? They still want to be in business too. Right. So it's like, I mean, competition's awesome. And that's not for us anyways. It stinks if somebody ends up losing, like the company, stinks for them. But for us, if all we're caring about is the content and the best quality, that's what you want, right? And to your right. point, it's like you want Voodoo pushing them. And that's why I like DTS when it came out. I love DTS coming out. DTS pushing the envelope, making Atmos, keeping them honest, right? And then the same with Auro 3D. It's like you want that. All right, somebody else, they're going to bring something to market and make them take notice. Yeah. The more competition, the better it is for us, you know?
Speaking of Auro 3D, your new processor has that, right? Have you tried that?
I haven't even messed with it yet. Haven't had a chance to really sit down. What I want to do is with Twister, because Twister's, that's actually, it's two different discs. But to be able to go from Atmos,
that's the one from Europe, right?
Yeah, the German disc. But the Atmos is incredible. It's what we always wanted, right? And it's hopefully it'll be coming here someday. But to be able to compare those and see what the difference is. And I need to, you know, have some time for that, to have some fun with it. And I just don't want to do stuff like that and feel rushed. Like, yeah, everybody, right. I heard it. It's like,
yep.
You know, so, but that's one of those, like, hey, it's a crappy rainy day. I get up in the morning and, you know, start at 8 o'clock and work on that until like 4 p.m. and have some fun with it. So that'll be one. I also have daylight I could do. I'll probably do that as well this winter. But see what all I'm really excited to see what the differences are. See if it's, you know, is it
audible or not? I mean,
I'm sure it's audible from people I've heard from people that
have. I just put it on once in a while. That's one thing with the Arcam. It does have
Auro 3D.
It has Auro 3D in it. So I'll put that on, you know, just to try it out, just to see if I really notice anything. There's just little things that you notice. It's not, you know, hard to really pinpoint. It's, you know, there's something different, but you just can't really pinpoint it.
Yeah,
you'll be able to, because you put a lot of effort into it. I'm just messing around. I put it on, I'll listen to it. I'm like, you know, yeah, this still sounds great, you know?
Right, right. But it's the thing to me, it's like, I've heard of people taking like Atmos and running it to, you know, mixing it to like Neural X. They'll change that out and be like, but why?
Why?
Right, right. You know? And that's kind of how I feel about Auro 3D. Like, I want more Auro 3D content. I don't necessarily want to take my Atmos and DTS:X mixes and run them through Auro 3D.
Right.
Maybe my big thing is it better than Neural X? Like, if I take all my 5.1 content, is that worth running through Auro 3D? I don't know, because I have to look into it. From what I've heard, I don't know if that one actually upmixes to your overheads. I heard it does a good mix, but it uses the bass layers. So I'm not sure. I haven't experienced it. I'm, you know, and like I said, that's something that I want to do a deep dive on and actually have fun with it, instead of just go, you know, like sometimes you'll get something and you'll just check it and see if it's there, right, and it exists. I don't want to just do that. Be like, yeah, right, it exists, because that's not how I want to experience it. But I really don't have any interest in taking Atmos and mixing it to another codec just for the sake, right, of doing that. It's like, because that's not what it was intended to be. It was intended to be Atmos, and it was mixed for that. So at least that's the mix that I'm hearing, right? So
does Steve George, does he have Auro 3D in his?
I don't think he does. His Yamaha?
Yeah,
I don't think his Yamaha does.
Disc like that, right?
Yeah, he has that disc. There. He has the disc. Yeah. He's heard the Atmos. I don't know. I don't think he has Auro 3D. I don't remember him mentioning it. Maybe he does, and I just don't remember him mentioning it.
Yeah,
I'm getting that a lot lately. I mean, people are telling me, "Oh, you said this in the podcast last week." I did. I was like, 2 weeks in a row it happened to me, and I was like, I have no recollection of saying stuff. And like, John and I'll have conversations and stuff, and I'm like, am I just getting old and I'm losing my mind?
It's just being over the age of 50, because that happens to me too.
Well, and I think it's also in combination of like when I record these podcasts, like John and I record at one point, Steve and I record at another point, I record a Tuesday podcast. I'm like, I'm just trying to keep things like I love, and I could be engaged in the conversations, right? I don't think anybody's ever heard me talking and going, he's just not engaged. Yeah. But to hear it back, like, what did I say?
Right.
I'm like, okay, I guess. And that's why I know I'm like, I always mean what I say. I just don't always remember it.
Right.
Like, okay. It sounds like something I'd say. My favorite one was, Hunter Killer. The reason
which I haven't seen it.
Oh, you haven't seen it at all?
Nope.
Oh my God. It's a great home theater movie. And I swore watching it that I'd already reviewed it. And I think I did, but not as a feature. I think I went through all my notes and all my other movies, but I didn't even have it written in any notes or anything saying, oh, also saw Hunter Killer. But I remember as I'm watching the movie, there's a couple of underwater scenes that I remember distinctly going, oh, this one here and the way that and like I thought I remember talking about it. So maybe I just talked about it with somebody. But what I thought was funny is when I was recording with Steve, Steve mentioned just out of the blue, I didn't mention Hunter Killer. And Steve goes, yeah, you were talking about Hunter Killer last week in the podcast. I was like, I was? And I literally have no memory of it. I thought I was watching Hunter Killer because I thought the listener wrote in saying, Hunter Killer, great demo movie. I just thought it was out of the blue, just somebody telling me see Hunter Killer. And I knew it was a great demo movie. So I purchased it on Kaleidoscape and watched it. I thought I was doing it because of the listener. But what ended up happening is the listener was responding to what I said in the podcast, which I don't remember saying. And I'm like, what the? So, oh, well, look at that. I'm making recommendations to myself out of the blue. And I don't even know it.
Nice.
Oh, but yeah, definitely. It's Gerard Butler.
Gerard Butler.
It's a little hokey. Steve's right in that aspect. It is a little hokey, but it's just a fun home theater movie. It's some really great bass, great sound effects all around, and I had a blast with it, absolute blast with it. And I think when I watched it this time, it's obviously a pretty much everything has been tweaked and upgraded to a point that I hadn't had before when I saw it before. So that's the other part. That
it's different too.
Yeah. Yeah. You're getting to hear things and, something Mike Schramm's going through right now with his center channel, you know, it's like,
yeah, it's funny. Cause last night he's like, EJ, I hear that tick that you're talking about. And I was right at that point where,
oh, the clock.
Know, Maverick's getting talked to, you know, and you hear tick,
it is.
I'm right there. I hear it right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. It's super obvious. It's not what I found amazing about it was how it wasn't subtle. That's the point. It's like, I mean, it's one thing to hear it. It's another to be like, that is a lot louder than I don't even remember hearing it in the theater. And maybe it was there, but you're in a giant theater. But how loud it was and what it means. I mean, listen to their entire conversation, right? It's all about like time ticking away on Maverick, on age. It's all like your time is up. This, that, and the other thing.
This is it.
But all the while you hear that. I mean, and I literally looked like, did I put a clock on the wall? Did I forget that? it sounded like one of those, you know, the plastic clocks you'd buy.
Yeah. Or like the old school clocks. Remember where you could hear it ticking away.
Yeah, if everything went quiet in the room, all you hear is the clock, right? Well, that's what it sounded like, but not everything was quiet in the room. You still had characters having a dialogue, right? You're like, how am I hearing that so clear? It was so great. And that's funny that Mike is like, oh, he actually DM'd me and he was like, is it possible that because of the SVS speaker that I'm hearing things in my rear channels that I'd never heard before? And I was like, absolutely. And absolutely possible because you've upgraded your center channel and you're getting this nice cleaner sound from the SVS speaker. It's just doing its job so well that everything else can flourish around you. And this thing isn't overpowering you and taking away from the other speakers. Right. And he's like, and he said, you put it, I said something and he quoted it and he's like, you put it perfectly. That's exactly what's happening. And I'm like, that is what they, and what's funny is your speakers work all together 100% of the time. Right. It's like,
yep.
And that's why the center channel is so important, is because that's your anchor to the movie. That's putting out pretty much everything. And then all the other channels are used to pull that sense of the sound coming from that area. But most of it is coming through the center channel as well. Every now and then you'll get a discrete something over the top, but I'll be willing to bet that almost everything you hear, that if you put your ear to the center channel, you'll hear a little bit of it there too. And yeah, to have that clarity, a neutral speaker to match the rest of your speakers. And that's the entire experience. Right. And I'm psyched for Mike, and it's because it's fun when you do that, right? And it's like you've experienced another speaker for so long, and then you get something and you're like, oh. And I think the last thing I said to him was, I'm like, well, looks like you got another reason to go through your catalog again.
There you go.
He just did that with the OLED. He went to an OLED and he's like, oh, look at all this stuff. Oh, I can see things. And now he's hearing things he'd never heard before. So that's fun. That's what this is all about. And that's why I was like, don't sleep on the digital version of Maverick, because you're missing a great experience that when it's a great movie that you're going to want to watch over and over. And then when you get the disc, you're going to be like, holy crap, this isn't what I'm used to.
I've watched it 4 times already. I mean, I tweeted out last night. I mean, everyone was gone. So I turned it up to,
yeah, you said that. Was it, you had 11, a decibel basically meter when you sent that out?
Yeah. I got up to 103.
Nice. Yeah, that's about, what scene was that? The clock ticker.
No, it was right after that, though.
So the right when they were going into training?
Right, yep.
Yeah.
And, you know, when they just started flying, and, you know, where is he? You know,
push-ups.
Just comes right up through him,
Whoosh, comes right up through the middle, and they just did such a great job with that. Even to the point of, and it's in the trailer, so it's not spoilers, but I mean, really, who's listening now that hasn't seen it? But it was in the trailer and I loved it. It's like the woman there, what was her name? Bob was her co-pilot. What was her name?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Phoenix. Her name is.
Yeah. And they're at the bar at the beginning. And she's like, they're the best of the best. Who are they going to get to teach us? And you're like,
ding, 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 ding. Oh, hey, old man, I'll take 4 more.
Yeah, exactly. Great. But it's like, but that's the mentality. And that's my favorite part of, I remember thinking that way when I was a kid, right? You get into your mid 20s and you think, I'm an adult now. I got married when I was 23. By the time I was 24, 25 years old, I'm like, I've got the world figured out. And then when you're 35, you're like, boy, was I an idiot. I didn't have the world figured out. Now I got the world figured out. Then when you turn 45, you're like, all right, now I really was an idiot, because I'm never getting this world figured out. That's right.
Because there is no figuring out.
There is no figuring out. That's when you know you're fully matured. it's like every time you think you've got the world figured out, you just haven't matured yet.
Right.
But that's what I thought was great, is you had that. And obviously we know the answer. We know how they're going to write a movie. It's going to be Maverick's going to show them. But it's like, just because you know everything, like him with the book, this is everything that you know. Yeah. And I'm going to show you what you don't know. And it's basically, and it's like, it's a great message. The entire thing is, there's more than one way to do things. Right.
Right.
You're an IT guy. I got one for you. Yeah. I called Ara on this a couple days ago. This might take us a little while. Why are we still using discs? Blu-ray discs, round discs that have to spin with a laser.
There's still going to be a laser. This is just from what I've it's been a long time, but the guy that taught me about working on PCs told me, he said that one day we'll have just a cube like that will be read by a laser, which have you ever seen the movie Serenity? It's the Firefly. So, you know how they have that little kind of like a disc, but it's like a piece of glass or whatever. And you just put it in the optical reader, you know, it just holds all. He said, basically, that's what we're going to end up with. It's just going to be like a piece of glass or polymer or something like that. That's going to just have all the information that you will ever need on it.
So yeah.
So we haven't gotten it out, I'm guessing.
Well, I was reading an article the other day. Justin put it out on High Def Disc News. He retweeted it from Hi-Fi News. I can't remember what it was, but it was basically, you might have seen it. It was this 1 terabyte optical disc that's supposed to be the Blu-ray killer. They said this could be the Blu-ray killer. So I'm reading the article, and the purpose of and this 1 terabyte disc is just the baby brother to the tech that they're talking about. It's going to look like the old. They had to give you an idea of what it looked like, it kind of looked like, remember the cartridges you used to put in for your 10 disc changer and you'd put like 5 in one side and 5 in the other.
Yeah.
It kind of looked like that, but that would be like a 10 terabyte, you know, something that you would connect and
drive.
That it would be that big and it's that portable. But here's the 1 terabyte optical disc and that's the tech, right? And I'm like, wait a minute. And that dawned on me. What the hell? Why are we putting movies out on disc? Why don't we put them out on a flash drive?
Right.
All the information can fit on a flash drive. And then you design the play. And Ira and I had this we workshopped the bejesus out of it. And he just kept saying, ship it, DJ. Because he's like, it'll work. And I'm like, I'll tell you what we came up with on why it won't work. But at the end of the day, we were like, you could have, so we have our Star Wars box set that could all fit on a single flash drive. And you design a player that you just plug the flash drive into the front and boop, it fires up. You could have all of the same, copy protection embedded in the source, embedded in the players. You could do all of that.
They did that with DivX. I don't know if you remember DivX, but you used to be able to, for a very short time, get a disc that had a time, it was time sensitive. You could put it in, you could watch it, and that was it. You couldn't watch it again.
Right. I remember that. It was disposable.
That was it.
Right.
Yeah. That was it.
But this would be a flash drive that you could market it like physical media. You could still have the box instead of opening it up and seeing this round disc, you'd have a little flash drive. And if you're really like, oh, but everybody likes the artwork, well, what the hell? Like, this is where Ira and I went. You could put all of Star Wars. You could turn it into a keychain. Oh, neato.
Yep.
I'm walking around with the entire Star Wars collection right here in the best possible quality because it fits an entire terabyte.
Right.
Right? And you could have all of that. Why? And this tech has been around for 15 years. Why are we still doing an optical disc where the laser has to read through the laser and your disc could scratch and your disc could do?
Yeah,
it's solid state. It's moving parts, right? A flash drive is solid state. That's why Ira yelled that one out when we were talking about it, because we were getting excited about it. We're like, what the hell?
Right.
And here's what I said. I go, the only reason we're not doing it is they don't want to do it. They don't want to do physical media anymore. It's done. And that's the only reason, because think of the just going to a flash drive, it would probably be cheaper, easier. An entire set, you wouldn't have to produce a disc for every time. It's all of this stuff, but it's all going to be downloaded eventually anyways. So why even bother coming out with the future physical media when they knew 15 years ago that this is the last physical media?
That's why the flash drive was invented. I mean, to get rid of the jump drives, to get rid of the CDs, to get rid of DVD burners. I mean, put it all in this one little thing. Here you go.
But you
and
think
we can of, reuse it as many times as you want.
You think of our Blu-ray collections. You think of Blu-rays in general. That's an old 80s antiquated idea. Yeah. It's basically a video version of the CD. It is so antiquated. And it's like, but we're still hanging on to it when other things have been invented to replace it already. Like you said, that's why they did a flash drive. I'm like, why? Why didn't we do it? And the only thing I could think of is they don't want it. They, why bother? Why put the money, resources, you know, into
an old technology?
Into an already obsolete technology because everybody's going to be downloading. We're not even going to need flash drives anymore. Really, right?
Right.
How often do you use a flash drive even now? You just send it to them. So it and that's the only thing. I'm like, now, I think, and now I'm feeling like I'm pretty smart. I just thought of this when the people in the business are like, look at this poor, isn't he cute? He's just thinking of something we thought of 20 years ago and we already deemed it obsolete. He thinks he's quick when he's 20 years late. He's got a good idea there. Yeah, you're 22 years too late. We already decided 20 years ago it was obsolete.
Right.
It was like, hey, look at me. But the article is what spawned it for me. I'm like, you think this is going to be the killer? But Blu-ray doesn't need a killer. It's already dead.
Exactly. You're gonna kill it again? You can't kill it twice.
It's not going anywhere. And they're not going to stop producing on this 1 terabyte. I don't even understand why they're inventing that.
Yeah.
In that article. Like, what the hell? Why are they inventing? Who's going to use that?
If you buy
it,
you buy any, just about any computer nowadays, there is no optical drive at all.
Right.
Unless you opt for that. But laptops don't have optical drives. Desktop, most of them don't have optical drives.
No. You have to buy an external optical, right?
Yeah.
I have one sitting right next to me, my external reader for my Zapedi that I have to use for the Zapedi. You know what? I came this close to calling you on something on my, on this podcast. Like, you can't hear the Wilhelm screams. You can't hear my soundboard anymore. Remember, you were on before and I played it for you and you could hear it. I don't know if you heard this, my soundboard, but John used to be able to hear it. And the app that we're using right now got rid of it. It only allows one audio channel through from my sound mixer.
Huh?
Yeah. And I was like,
is that a licensing thing or something like that?
No, I think they're just doing it to streamline the system so it's more reliable. And they probably found that like most people aren't using mixing boards like I am. So it just streamlines it. But it bothered me for like 2 weeks. And I was like, I'd be at work trying to think it through. Like, why can't John hear my sound mix anymore? Because I would, you know, he can't hear the board anymore. And I worked really hard to get that to work. That took me a while to figure that out. And I finally figure it out, we had it for like a little over a year, but then they just did an update on July 23rd. That's how I found it. It's like update on July 23rd. You boop, 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 and here are the upgrades. And I was like, what? And I click on them. Like, there it is. So it's software. Oh, well, all right. Any other good movies, scenes or stuff?
Let's see.
What do you got? What springs? Have you seen any of the new? Have you seen Lord of the Rings?
I watched the first episode yesterday.
What did you think? Home theater wise,
I liked it. I thought it was very good.
I thought it looked beautiful. I thought that for Amazon, John and I will talk about it again on Friday. But Amazon, I had my doubts because like HBO Max, I wasn't crazy, but I've never been really crazy about their stuff. They're typically one of the weaker streamers.
Yeah.
And this is much like Game of Thrones is looking on HBO Max right now. It's fantastic. The Atmos is really nice. Wait till episode 2 is good too.
I think that's by choice. I think they just try to, you know, unlike Apple, where they produce all their own stuff, wherever, you know, these guys, Amazon, because it's an Amazon original, I believe, I think they're putting their extra time and
and
money into that. Kind of like Tomorrow War.
Yeah.
That was on Amazon. That was great. It was everything great point. Worked.
Yep. Fine.
But then you watch something that's not an Amazon original, and it doesn't have the Atmos. It doesn't have the best picture, you know. So
I just thought of something just off you saying that. They also sell the physical media on their website. So why would they want to give you the good version there? They want you to hear it there and go, this doesn't sound good. Let me get the disc. And you go to, where do you go? Amazon and buy the disc.
Exactly.
So I don't know. It seems like they're just trying to make money off us, Dan.
Yeah, I don't get that.
I don't understand it.
Don't they have enough? Can't they just, you know, start
why can't
putting
they just,
stuff out?
Yeah.
Just give it away.
Yeah, I love it. I think it was interesting when I tweeted about it. Jeff at HD Reports, like, did you find that it was, I don't know if he said blooming or what he said about, he thought the brights were too bright or blooming or something. And I didn't find that. I thought it looked really good. I thought that it was a palette choice, especially with the elves and because they're all about the light. So I thought that was a palette choice because where you wanted darker scenes or you wanted more vibrant colors, you got it. And I thought that there were times of like things seemed to be maybe a little bit washed out or something. But I thought that was I thought that was a choice for the particular scenes because there's great shadow detail that I got out of it. I'll talk about with John. There's one in particular I'll talk about with John in the on Friday. I have it in my notes, but I can't remember the creature. You might remember it, but a creature shows up on the top left of your screen and then goes around behind the character. But if you're not paying attention, you don't know it's there, but it's there and you could see it in the shadow detail and it's awesome for the HDR. Like if you're running some good HDR, you're going to be able to see that creature in the top left. It goes behind some rocks and comes out on the right. Top right, just as a shadow inside the shadow, she's in a cave, and then all of a sudden it comes out at her. But
that was the winter,
creature, a snow creature,
ogre, or whatever it's called.
But did you see it come out at the top left? You see it go by.
Yeah, I saw something, I just couldn't make out obviously what it was, but then she's walking with her torch.
Yeah.
So spoiler alert, she's walking with a torch and
in a dark cave.
Right there. Right.
Exactly. But it's like you see it sneaking around above her, above and behind her in the shadows.
Yeah.
And I see stuff like that. And before I had my Lumigen, I never would have seen that. There's no way. It would have been crushed. Because it's literally like two steps of black difference between the two shades.
Yeah,
right?
The difference,
Yeah, and it just
it's a winter ogre, I think is what it is.
Is that what they call it?
Winter ogre, I believe. Yeah.
But and if you haven't gotten to that scene yet and you're listening, when you get there, you'll go back it up and you'll see it in the top left. It's pretty cool. And if you don't see it, get a calibration.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought I thought the Atmos was really good in that. It's got some really tight bass, it almost felt like, well, to be honest with you, I went back to the disc. I put in Lord of the Rings and I thought, I'm like, not as good as that, but it's good for stream. It's really, really good for stream.
It is.
You're right. They can do good stuff. And like, that's a great point. They do it for their originals, their prime originals.
Right. It's an option. Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, even when I worked, for Cox Communications, they would do like ESPN or like a sporting event.
Mm-hmm.
They'd break the channel down because it's a 6 megahertz bandwidth. That's all you had for the channel to go out. But you can fit, other channels inside that. So you might have 5 channels in that 1 6 megahertz bandwidth.
Yeah.
But half of that might be taken up by, we'll say, ABC, NBC, CBS, or something like that. And then, so you get like 3 megahertz of the channel gone. And then the rest of the bandwidth, say, goes to HBO or it goes to ESPN or something like that. So you can't, I mean, they do manipulate that. So something gets preference over another.
Really?
That's just in cable and like that. So in streaming, you know, I don't think it all goes in one package like that. But
so they could prioritize stuff.
Correct.
That's basically what you're saying. So I kind of, maybe they can do that with streaming too. Prioritize your bandwidth for certain. I mean,
I don't know why not. I mean, you know, okay, this show's going to go out at 2 meg, you know, a second, mm-hmm. and this one can go out at 7 or something like that, you know. And
well, I suppose if they could shut it off, like I have to pay for it, right? When I pay for it, they turn on HBO Max, right? Just
right.
Getting back to your room being all black as opposed to another color. Let's go to the extremes. If they can shut it off, why can't they dial it too, right? Why can't they give you degrees of power instead of just yes or no? There's got to be a degree of power there too. And I wonder if there's agreements like does HBO, like that's why they charge as much as they do. They, you know, you're paying $15.99, but some of that goes to the, you know, the company, the cable company, the internet company. And that might be the agreement with HBO. Be like, we're going to have you throttle this back and forth, but we want the rights to do that. So this is what it's going to cost. Okay. I don't know. I'm just spitballing here. And then, but Apple, everything is in-house.
It's theirs,
right? And it's like they're going to work within the bandwidth that they've given, and then they're just, now they're, that's that. That's interesting. That's pretty cool. So they would, now, do you think they do stuff like that on Sundays? Or especially back then, did they do that for like Super Bowls and stuff? Like really give you a ton of bandwidth for the Super Bowl? Because I know everybody's watching it anyways. And
yeah, because everything's in a virtual channel. So you know, that 6 megahertz wide channel. Look, so like you put on channel, say channel 5, you know, for here in Boston or something like that. Over the air, it's channel 5, but like on your cable box, it may be on channel, 17 or something like that. Because it's a virtual channel.
4405.
So yeah, there you go. So they can just, that can be modified to have just the game in that, you know, and it just gets updated and, okay, Super Bowl's tomorrow. We're going to put all this bandwidth into that so that we don't have egg on our face and, you know, everything comes through crystal clear and everything.
Yeah, you want Heidi playing at the best possible rate at the end of the game.
Right.
Wonder how many people know what get that reference. Yeah, that's interesting that they're doing that to us on the, I never even thought of that. I just was always thinking that, you know, all my bandwidth, everything is taken just by the amount of usage in my house, in my neighborhood, I should say, by everybody there. Obviously we know what's going on in our houses too.
Yeah.
Cool. That's really cool. How about, the Game of Thrones, House of Dragons.
I've only seen the first episode of that. I thought that was very good too. I mean, that it looks, I think what takes place like 300 years before, something like that, or
yeah, it's like 200 300 years before.
But I mean, it looks great. It's still not like the first episode of, you know, of Game of Thrones, because that was they had a lot going on in it. All those.
Yeah. Games.
But this one, you could follow a little better with who the characters are.
Yeah, because you have a background already. You know, I never read any of the books. But in the original, one of the things my wife and I are saying about like this new one, The House of Dragons, it's you miss the knowledge you have and the history you have with the original series. Right. Like I was saying with John the other day, like, you know, having Arya and having all the Stark families and all of this and all the different and knowing all the different places and all the different people, Cersei and blah, blah, blah. And you have all this history. We're starting all anew. You're getting in, you're learning backgrounds and you're learning the characters, which is fun, but you still kind of miss that intimacy you had with like loving this guy, hating this guy, loving this person, right. You know, and vice versa. And it's like, because where I think that's a little different than the Lord of the Rings is the Lord of the Rings was, that was three movies. I don't feel like we were as invested in all those characters as we were with Game of Thrones, which was an 8 series, which took place over what, 10 years, I think. It didn't for me. We came in very late. We actually came in like a year before season 8 dropped, and with the box set. But still, experiencing 8 seasons of in-depth characters and like I said, the love and the hate, lots of love and lots of hate going on.
Yeah.
Lord of the Rings wasn't like that. Lord of the Rings was 3 movies. Yes, they're long, but it's still just an epic series. But now we're getting... I actually felt a little bit more engrossed so far in both. I've experienced 2 episodes of each. I feel a little bit more engrossed in the Lord of the Rings series than I do, like, character-wise. Probably because they're fleshing out some characters that hadn't been before. And you're like, oh, this is new. Whereas I feel like it's lacking in the other one, but it's not lacking any more than Lord of the Rings. It just feels lacking because we know the history of Game of Thrones. You know what I mean?
So, yeah.
But at home theater wise, I think they're both
fantastic. Both great.
They're one of those things that I can't wait for the next one to drop, to be honest with you. It's like my wife and I do the Game of Thrones on Monday nights. Because when it's just not going to stay up, we'll watch it Monday night after dinner. And then she hasn't watched Lord of the Rings with me, so I'm just waiting. But I'll probably watch that if it's out. That might be a Friday morning thing that I watch before work, because to me it's that good.
Yeah.
And the first two are 1 hour each, which is also nice. I like that. You're getting a good amount of content right there each week.
Right.
So hopefully they're all 1 hour each, but. Do you know how many episodes it is? The Lord of the Rings?
I don't.
Looks like 8, I think. Series. I just pulled it up. Series directed by, and they have 3 different people. 3 people. One person did 4 episodes, then 2 different people did 2 episodes each.
Ooh.
So it looks like 8 episodes.
Let's hope it doesn't change much between.
Well, I don't know if they did them in order or what.
Yeah.
That's usually not too bad of a thing. Yeah. Pretty cool. Pretty cool.
It is. I mean, interesting. Like I said,
it's all based off of Lord of the Rings. It's all new stuff because it's never been written about before. So I think it's pretty interesting where they're going with it.
Yeah, I definitely, you know, it captures your attention right away too. It's not, you know, it's not real dragged out. It really it's right there, you know. It starts off
very
well.
Exactly like Fellowship. It literally starts exactly like it, even to the point like, is my projector on? Because they start with the dialogue and the screen's just black and you're like, is everything on? Let me check.
I thought the same thing. I'm like, oh crap, I don't see the light on my TV. I know it's on. I mean,
yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh no, what broke? And then, it's funny because I'm like, okay, all right, I'm just into the show. And then when I was done with that episode, I went back and watched, like I said, Fellowship of the Ring. And the opening scene, it starts the exact same way. I was like, oh, okay, I see what they did there. But it is very much the same way. You have the dialogue, you know, the monologue at the beginning, a little bit of action, a little backstory, and then they bring you right into some story with some characters like they did with Bilbo and Frodo. And it's very much, I mean, mirrored it very, very well and gets you right into that mood, right into that world. And like I said, and some familiar characters too. So that's a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to anybody else popping up or anything that could possibly pop up. Cause this one here, do you know that how many years? I haven't seen it yet. I just get estimating off of what I know from Lord of the Rings and hearing when you listen to the monologue at the beginning of that, it's like the war with Sauron that took place. Right. And then he loses his hand and loses the ring. then man had the ring and lost said ring, and it was misplaced at the bottom there, you see at the beginning.
Yeah.
For 2,500 years, right?
Oh.
Yeah. And then Gollum had it for 500. I'd forgotten that. He had it for 500, and then Bilbo had it for almost 100 years.
Right.
So that's over 3,000 years just there, and the Rings of Power takes place way before that war.
Way before that, right.
So that's, I don't know what the timestamp is on this.
I don't either. I was just going to say something, but I don't want to spoil it for anything, for anyone.
Yeah. So, well, it's about the Rings of Power, so you know that. I mean, it's in the title. But yeah. Epic drama set thousands of years before the events of J.R.R. Tolkien's The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings follows an ensemble cast. So, yeah, thousands of years. So it doesn't say how many thousands, just thousands. But yeah, it's... Where is this going to go as far as home theater? Like, how good can this streaming stuff get? Because it is really, really good right now.
Yeah. And speaking of that, the next thing I would say would be on C.
Oh, Apple. Yeah.
That's
Oh, did you see this week?
Really,
I haven't seen this week's yet.
No, I didn't.
You saw the first episode, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So good. That's another one John and I have been raving about since it came out. It's the openings. And getting back to the Lord of the Rings, the Rings of Power, the opening for that, I don't know if you've seen that yet. Because I don't know if it played at the beginning of the first episode. And they have like the...
I don't remember any...
Wait till you see it. To start the second episode, the opening credits, they do it with sand. But okay.
It's
like rain. They're moving. It's rain.
Right,
it's
trees. It's vibrating.
Rain. Yeah. Yep. Vibrating.
Yeah.
It's like
I did see that.
Okay,
that was cool.
That is it's in and the same with C. What's another one that I watched that's very much that's very very good? The space one on Apple.
Yeah, TV I know you're talking about.
For All Mankind, these openings are like HDR test patterns. They're like,
right.
But I want to say the Rings of Power, that's got to be my favorite one so far. And I think was my favorite before that episode, season one, season two, and now season three. They're great. But this Rings of Power one is like the grains of sand that they're using. And then they're blending it with like, almost like it turns into like, almost like smoke or something. You have that, so many gradations of color and darkness and everything going on the screen. And then the bright colors of each grain of sand. But then they're also focusing on some of the sand. So like the stuff on the periphery is out of focus. And to have all of that going on your screen, it's just like, it's amazing.
It reminded me also of, it's an HBO series. It's been going on for a little while. Where they have the
they use sand
Anthony
as well.
Hopkins
Westworld.
In it. Yeah, Westworld. That's what.
Yeah.
Where they do the same thing. You get the like the horse galloping, and then it's making like people and.
But that's always been on HBO, anyways. That's always been in high def.
Yeah,
I wait and buy them in the 4K disc, and you can get and they look fantastic there. But on HBO, anyways, I wish they would come out with that in 4K. You know, with Atmos, because the discs, same thing. It's like they did Lord of the Ring. I'm sorry. They did Game of Thrones. Everything was just high def 5.1, but then they would come out with the 4K Atmos, or they came out with a high def Atmos set. And then it was just in the last year or so, they came out with the 4K set.
The 4K.
Yeah. Cause we watched everything on that's the reason I got into Game of Thrones was because of Atmos. Because it said it had Atmos, and I was like, oh, let me try this. So I bought season one, and my wife loved it, so I ended up keep on going with it. But it was all just because I wanted to try the Atmos out and see what it sounded like. So
I bought, I think it's Coco, that the
Disney animated
movie.
Yep.
Yeah, I bought that when it came out just because, you know, everyone said, oh, the Atmos is fantastic in it, and so is the HDR. So I'm like, all right, well, here I am, you know, my late 40s buying a kid's movie that my child is, you know, 20 years old. She's not going to watch this. And here I am watching it, and she walks in. She's like, Dad, what are you doing? I'm like, do you hear this song? It just sounds so good, you know, and look at it. How vibrant it is. So, yeah, same type of thing. And then that just got me hooked even more with you know, just trying to search out, only buy things that have Atmos and HDR. So
right. More content. I just want more. Yeah. Like, have you seen Sonic 2?
No.
Oh, that's another one. That's a demo disc. I wasn't even going to buy that one till and
but Omar said something, wasn't Omar the one
and
said
Mike
that?
Schramm. They, yeah. I think Mike Schramm's the one that had the, there's an overhead scene, and he had timestamped it for me, and I was like, all right. So I bought it, and I'm like, hey, it is a demo disc. It's the entire thing. The bass in it is incredible. Really good. Yeah. But yeah, it's fun people get talking about this stuff, and you're like, oh, okay, yeah. I mean, I wasn't talking to anybody. I bought Casper on Laserdisc, so. Because it had good sound. It had a good surround sound experience. So I bought that on Laserdisc. Like, it's awful.
Wait, I had a Laserdisc player. I never, ever got any Laserdiscs. Never. I had a Pioneer Laserdisc player given to me. The thing was like,
oh, okay.
You know, it looked like a printer is what it looked like, you know, like tall and gray, but I never got to have a disc to put on it. But the first time I saw it was, I was in a oceanography class in high school. Uh-huh. And he took it out and they put the big platter on. And I'm like, man, this looks fantastic. And, you know, then I tried finding something. I'm like, I can't afford those discs. So
yeah, they were like $40 each one back then. That'd be like, I mean, $40 back then, if you know, I was buying them in the 90s. So if you adjust, that's gotta be a $60 movie each week.
And or more. I mean,
I don't know, but that's what I was buying at least one a week. And I'm like, got stacks of them over here, but I just, that's the stupid hobby. That's, that's what you do. Things are relatively a lot cheaper now than they were in the 80s and 90s. It's, I mean, and it's still not expensive, but it's.
Right. As I say, it's not because we make more or anything like that. It's just,
Well, it kind of is, because think about movies. They're $19 to $30, right? $19.99 to $29.99 for a movie.
Yeah.
They've always been that price. So ever since, you know, ever since the DVD days.
DVDs. Yeah.
DVD. It's not like the price of them hasn't gone up. But, you know, cost of living, everything else, we're all making more now just because of that than we were back in the late 90s when DVD was invented. But a DVD came out and it was supposed to be $19.99. It was supposed to be cheaper than a Laserdisc, more, you know, better quality than VHS. And that was its claim, because DVD wasn't better than Laserdisc. And there were huge arguments about that on which is a better format. And much like we were talking about with the flash drive, it was DVD was the chosen one to go forward because it was smaller, more marketable and stuff like that. It's like, nobody wants Laserdisc is so antiquated. You had two sides of the disc, but we also had that on DVDs at one time too.
Right.
You know, and we kind of still do now with, even the Lord of the Rings movies, you got to have two discs.
Yeah.
So wouldn't have to have that on a flash drive.
No, you wouldn't. You just put it in and just let it go.
And you don't need that on a download. So there you go. Like, that's, I like the Kaleidoscape. There's no intermission on the Kaleidoscape. Kind of missed that.
Right. And someone had tweeted last night, I think it was, you know, kids don't, you know, they don't have their family saying, you know, okay, time for a pee break. Everyone, you know, everyone run or whatever. Come on, it's back on. It's back on.
Yeah, the commercial. Like, hurry. Right. Here comes the commercial. You got to run to the bathroom. And then, and what I was going to add to that tweet was the other thing that people don't realize is when you missed it, you were like, oh, you were searching the TV guide that summer for when the rerun was going to play.
Right.
Because if you missed your episode of Knight Rider that week, You had no shot of finding it, of seeing it. You had to wait until it was a rerun. And then in the summer, you'd be going through your TV guide going, did I see this one? You know, and reading the synopsis for the show. And it's like, everything's so accessible now. It's right. Crazy. It's
Some people would be saying, TV guide, what's a TV guide? What did that do? I mean,
yeah,
almost like HBO used to have the little pamphlet that they sent out on a monthly basis too. So you could see when your movies were gonna come up.
Yeah, when Blue Lagoon was gonna be playing at 10:30 at night.
That's right. Mom and dad are asleep.
Mom and dad are in bed and you'd set your alarm and get up and watch TV in the living room. Whoop, there we go.
Yep.
Oh yeah. It's like, but now it's like when I just said TV guide, it's like everybody's like, he must mean the thing, on the screen.
On the TV.
This was a book that you, different covers each week. People save
every week.
Every week you had it and you bought it at the checkout right next to your Inquirer. You'd buy your TV guide and it's like, and I love that. And each channel was written on there.
Right.
Inside a little tiny TV. And the main channels, 4, 5, and 7 in Boston, were in black.
Yep.
Right. And then the rest of them, like the UHF channels, were white. The lower TVs. Gray.
Yeah.
And it was like, that's how we knew what was going to be on. It wasn't hard to discern. We only had 3 channels.
Right. Exactly. Yep.
Oh, the good old days, Dan. That's so great.
They were.
What do you got?
You're thinking
hard over there. I was like, don't hurt yourself.
Yeah, that's not hard to do either. I think I've gone through my list here. One thing that stands out for me, I don't know why, but in Top Gun, when Warlock is up, just getting ready to, to tell the pilots, who's going to train them. Mm. And behind them, he's got the American flag and he just has that red stripe. And I'm like, man, that red just looks so nice. It's just, I don't know what it is. It just, it's just vibrant.
Yeah. It's,
I don't know.
This, the colors on this movie are just so nice. The movie itself, Todd and I were talking about it just briefly, I think a couple days after it came out. But it's like, not only is the sound super dynamic, like you get some fantastic bass, you get depth to the bass, like a texture to the bass. It's so good. But the picture too is so I was talking with somebody about it. It might have been in the podcast. I'm not sure. Sonic 2 is very dynamic. It's very vibrant and bright because it's a video game. Top Gun Maverick is vibrant and bright, but it's real world vibrant and bright. It's like, I mean, all their helmets are designed in a certain way to bring out something, right? Even Hangman's helmet and the way it's written and stuff, it's just a different tone than, say, like you have the old school Maverick helmet. Which is, and you can even see kind of like the stickers on it and stuff, but some of the other people, like everything, the details that are in this and the close-ups on their faces and how the glare, so they've got the shield coming around, but the glare magically ends right before you're going to be focused on their face.
Yeah, it just squares their face off. Yep.
But that the glare on those helmets and the vibrant colors coming off of that, just like the reflection, it's just so nice. Yep. But you could still see their face and their the thought and it's just all of the colors in this and the black levels. And when he goes into the bar and it's a little bit hotter in there and you see it's kind of like I always use Predator for this, but like almost like a humidity effect, a hazy effect. Right. Same thing. One of the things I didn't mention when I talked about Hunter Killer the other day is, so in, I, like I said, in Predator, you go and look and you have that hazy jungle effect, that humidity, that gross, like, and you, especially here in New England, we know that feel. You step outside. I was driving to work the other day and I'm going down 290 and I'm going east, right? And I'm coming down the hill out of Worcester and I could see off in the distance, I could see multiple hills of trees, and each layer of hill, each layer of trees was whiter as it got further away because it was a very humid day. I almost was going to take my phone out and take a picture and tweet about it because, like, this is real life HDR, right? Where you're seeing that. One of the aspects you get in New England, and this is where it comes into Hunt a Killer, is there were different parts of that movie that had some haze in them. They're in a submarine and you're in this and that, but they also went to Russia. And when they went to Russia, check out those scenes and how crisp they are. And that's cold air.
We're cold, right.
And all of a sudden,
which we also have here.
That's what I was saying. Like, we're familiar with that. And when I saw that on my screen, I'm like getting it right now, like getting chills, just thinking like that. It felt like cold air. Like, you knew you were in Russia. You knew it was just crisp, cold air, no humidity whatsoever. And the way that was shot, and you look at the depth of those shots and like the black level on the person way in the back down the tarmac, just as deep a black as the person right in front of you. And it's like, it didn't flatten the picture. That actually, it gave you that sense of, wow, it's cold there. And I thought that was like, that those are things that we sometimes take for granted, but when you're watching a movie, it can give you, it really can pull you in and give you that feel of the movie. I don't know why I forgot to mention that, because I don't know if I had that in my notes, but it was something that I noticed, that that's another thing HDR can do, and really good HDR. And then the filmmakers utilizing that to really pull that out for you. It's just, oh, it's so cool. Yeah. Oh, I can't wait for you to see that movie.
I'm gonna put my notes right now.
Yeah. And
Hunt a Killer must see.
Hunter Killer.
There you go.
What else? It was something else about Maverick I was going to say. I always got something to say about Maverick. Oh, Warlock. You mentioned Warlock. I love his rapport with Maverick.
And because he knows that Maverick knows what he's talking about. Like, when he first came in and he's like, you know, explain, you know, what would we do? Same thing. He just looks over like, yeah, see, this is why I, you know, he's here.
Right, that's why he's here.
This is why Iceman called him to come here.
Right, and John Hamm's character, Cyclone, right? I think his name, is that it? John Hamm's character is great. It's like, he's, I don't like you. I don't like your methods. Right. I don't like this, but it's like, but I loved the later scene. It's not really a spoiler, but later on when, you'll know the scene I'm talking about, when Warlock looks at him, he goes, I think he's being rhetorical.
Right. Oh, yeah. And
look at Tom Cruise's face. He's like a little kid.
Yeah.
Right? Because he's so excited. Yeah,
he like starts, he starts walking forward. Right. He's like, he puts his hand like.
And he goes, I think he's. But watch Tom Cruise look at Warlock, right? And he looks at him just like my son has done to me. No. Hang on a second. Okay, Dad. And he looks like, okay, because he's so excited, but he looks at Warlock, shakes his head like, oh, okay, and then resets himself back to where he should be. But he almost looked at Warlock like a dad, right? But I love that rapport, and I love that excitement out of Maverick. I love that the character Maverick, and for Tom Cruise to play that part and do it so well. It's such a small part of the movie, but it's just like, I just love that. Well, he's like, oh, okay, yeah, you're right. Uh-huh. And he goes back at attention or whatever. It was really cool. And Warlock, I mean, like I said, Warlock is, think about that. Like, when you're writing the movie, all right, we got John Hamm here. We have that character. Why is he even there?
Right. He's just like an assistant. He's just like a,
I think he's actually higher than him. I think they're equals or something. They're working together. Yeah. But in like, if he's not there, can't you still have the whole dynamic of John Hamm and Tom Cruise just butting heads? Yeah. And, you know, it's like Warlock really doesn't say much throughout the movie, other than, you know, he's there to show like somebody other than Iceman has respect That's about it.
Right.
For Maverick. That's about it.
Yeah.
You know.
Like he's like the buffer between them. So he like you said, right. he knows what Maverick is capable of. And he's trying to show, you know, tell John Hamm, you know, that this is the right choice.
Yeah.
Just yeah. let him do. He knows what he's doing. Yeah, like, do what he's doing.
Like when he goes, here, I'm going to submit the.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He takes it right out.
Yeah. He goes, oh, by the way, he goes, what's this for? And he goes, I want to lower the hard deck. Right. Yeah. After he just yelled at him about lowering the going below the hard deck. And then Warlock on the way out, he's like, yeah, you got to work on your timing.
Timing. Yep.
So good. I think I've seen it probably six or seven times.
Yeah, I've only seen it four.
More, so. Maybe more than that, but not in its entirety. Like, I've just jumped to some scenes. And, like, last night when I was done, I was just like, I finished up watching some movies. And I'm like, all right, I got to put this on. So I went to that scene. Then I went to the, you know, the 2:15 scene. And you're like, all right. And then once you're there, I'm like, might as well finish it. Okay. Yeah. Just go through the end of it again.
I mean, one of my favorite visual parts is, like, right at the beginning. When they're showing him in you know doing when he's getting ready to turn around from doing Mach 10,
yeah,
and it's like it's showing him down, you know, below you with the clouds and everything like that,
yeah,
and it's just so cool how it just shows that the plane just or you know, the jet just coming around and that circle getting ready to do it again,
yeah. Yeah, just following the giant really curve nice. That he's doing yeah. that takes up like the Earth,
right?
Because it's like you're not banging a Yui and doing Mach 10,
right.
And he's like taking up the whole Earth, and you're seeing it from space, looking down at him, and you're just seeing that big curve. Like my son and I were watching it a couple of days ago, and he's like, "Pretty tight turn for Mach 10."
Yeah,
it's like yeah, it is. I'm like it is, but it is still like the Earth. Right?
Right.
So like that's what, maybe 1,000-mile curve or something like that.
Right.
But even still at that speed, it's just I think it's how many like to be doing Mach 10 and then like how many G's he's pulling at that point and just seeing that stuff and what these guys are doing. It's like and I that plane's real too, isn't it?
I don't know. It looks like an SR-71 Blackbird is what it looks like.
It's smaller than the that. Old, yeah, my son looked it up. It's definitely smaller than the Blackbird. That thing's huge. This one here looks relatively small, especially when they show him standing next to it in the hangar. And you're like, looks like a regular fighter, you know, but it does that.
But then it's got the scramjet on it. Where he shuts off the.
Yeah, what does that mean?
No, I have no clue.
I don't know. It's like it might not even be a real
super
thing.
Super fast.
yeah. Scram. Okay, I'm out of here.
Yeah, I'm out of here. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, what was it? He put the scramjet on and he was already doing Mach 3 and then he just went back in his seat. You're like ugh.
Putting a supercharger on a jet.
It's so good. And it's this is a little spoilery, but I won't say why, but it's so much better to rewatch than it was when you watched it the first time because you're on the edge of your seat the whole time.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? And it's like you're on the edge of your seat the whole time, and then the rewatch, you're just like, ah, this is nice. This is not like you know the story, you know everything about it, and you can just relax and watch the story play out. It's so much better. I think I actually enjoyed it more. I mean, I love the initial experience in the theater, but watching it, I think that's why it's so rewatchable for a movie. Cause it's a fun movie. You have like, even during your dialogue times, like we were talking about with Warlock and all the cadets or not even cadets, all the other pilots, but then the action sequences, there's a bunch of them and it's scattered throughout, so there's really not much to jump through when you're trying to just get to great scenes. You're like, all right, I'll just let this play out because you even like the rapport he's having with everybody, you know. And
I don't know. Have you I felt bad, but I felt for Iceman, actual Val Kilmer, because you know they brought him into the movie, and he got to be in it. Have you seen on Netflix? Have you watched? Or I think is it Netflix or Amazon? They have Val or whatever.
I haven't seen that yet. I keep meaning to. It's one of those things.
It's pretty heavy.
Yeah, I had a listener from my other podcast. I ran into him. He was down in Val Kilmer was at the Connecticut Comic Con, whatever they called it.
Yep.
And one of my other listeners was going down there with a big Tombstone poster to have signed. And he had bought his ticket to get it signed and everything. And he waited in the long line, huge long line. But they had this room cordoned off, and you waited in the line, and then you got admit one person at a time got to go in the room. And when I met up with my listener, I was like, hey, and he showed me the poster. He'd already been in, and he told me meeting him. He's a great guy, but much like that movie, that's exactly how he was,
right?
Without all the makeup and everything. And the but he was
well. He does it well, at least in that the show or the documentary, he was always wearing like a scarf or something.
A scarf, yeah, covering him. But that's like he's very much handled, and I don't know what a situation is right now. I know he did improve. I mean, he's still not great, but I know he did improve since the Connecticut appearance that I knew about. And that was like 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. But he said he was a great guy, and like he did speak to him as much as he could. Like Val talked to him as well, like while he was signing. He's like, oh, hey, thanks. You know, he's very good spirits, very much like that. But yeah, I haven't seen I love Val Kilmer. I was like, when I was a kid, my girlfriend was in college. I was a senior in high school, and I went to pick her up at college. And this was in like 87. And one of the guys in her dorm, I met him, and he's like, hey, you look like Val Kilmer. And I was like, who's that?
Ooh, thank you.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know who it was. I'm like, he was, I mean, Iceman. And that's what he said. He goes, you know who Iceman is? And I was like, yeah, from Top Gun. He goes, yeah, you look like him. Oh, okay. Thanks. And I was like, so ever since then, I was like, I actually went as Iceman 1 year for Halloween. I bought the jumpsuit.
Yep. Just spike your hair up a little bit.
That's how I had my hair at the time, too. That's how I used to wear my hair. And it's like, I mean, back then, short, spiky at the top, and it's like just back. And that's what I used to do. And I probably had a mullet too.
Yeah.
Back then, mid 80s. It wasn't called a mullet though. That was hockey hair.
Yeah, it's called a haircut. Exactly.
Yeah. I don't know when it got the name mullet, but yeah, so I was like, I mean, I love Val Kilmer. And then after that, I knew, obviously, we all know him from Tombstone, and you start to look back, and then you had Top Secret, which came out before that, but now you start to realize who the character was. But, I mean, I think that was his first big break. First big movie where big recognition was Top Gun.
Right, because he had a movie before that, I believe it was before that, where he was, when he was in college, with a bunch of smart kids, like they're all like it's almost like a Caltech or something like that.
Yeah,
I can't remember the name of the movie. Look it up here.
Let's see. He was in Top Gun, like, Real Genius.
Yeah, Real Genius. I was gonna say I thought it was Genius something. Yeah.
Yeah, Real Genius was the year before Top Gun. But Top Secret was 84. That was that was his first movie. Then Real Genius, I'm looking at his IMDb right now. Then obviously he did.
If you haven't seen that, that's pretty good too. That
which one?
That has to do with Real Genius.
Oh yeah, I remember Real Genius from the 80s. I haven't seen it in a long time, but yeah, Real Genius. Willow. You remember him in Willow? Yeah. Let's see, The Doors. He was awesome.
I heard he played a great Jim Morrison.
You didn't see it? I never watched it. Oh,
no,
my God. That came out in
really, really good.
That came out in 91. And I remember reading articles on that because people were going to the movie theaters and they were like, it's too loud. But they were told to pump it up even louder in the theaters. And it was awesome. I got to watch that one again. He plays an awesome Jim Morrison in that movie. Fantastic. It's a great sounding movie, too.
Yeah, speaking of that, because I know, I think it was Omar was talking about, or was it Johnny Speakers? One of them, I think, was talking about the, listening to the music instead of, you know, just.
That was Nelson when he was on.
Oh, Nelson,
me.
Sorry. Nelson.
When he was yep. on with me and he was saying, listen in Jurassic World Dominion, and he was yep. like, listen to the music instead of the sound effects. And I'm like, but I right. love the and, sound effects.
And that's one thing I love to do too. Like in Top Gun, they had the Who playing mm-hmm. when
oh
they were flying.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. That's the soundtrack in Top Gun Maverick. Yeah. Oh, so good. But when they, with that, oh yeah, the yelling, the yep. screaming from the Who, and you're like, yep. it fits so perfectly. It's so good.
And then also, it was this, I think it was the Star Trek, the newer ones. But I think it was it was the second one of the new Star Trek mm-hmm. that they have, where they play Beastie Boys. And I went yeah. and actually saw this at the movie theater and in IMAX again. And that just cranked, and I'm like, this is it. This is awesome. This is how I wish, you know, it could be like this all the time.
Yeah, that and exactly. And that, like you said, the Who playing, that's what I wanted. What I wanted yep. out of Ragnarok, the opening of Ragnarok, when they start playing,
Led Zeppelin.
Led Zeppelin, yep. And you're like, because it was in the commercial, right?
Yeah, and exactly.
The commercial sounded so good. The trailer sounded so good, a lot like the Mission Impossible with Henry Cavill, and you get that bait. It sounded so good that when you got to the movie maybe that's part of the reason Ragnarok just didn't play well is because they didn't match the intensity of that song. And it's the opening yeah. part of the movie. And like, once you get to that opening part, you're like, hey, it feels kind of flat. Now that's all right. you're going to think the rest of the movie. Right. And it's like, right. it's all up here. And it's like, they just really missed it on that one. And I'm really hoping on this new one with they got Guns N' Roses in right. Love and Thunder.
Love and Thunder.
I'm like, yeah. Oh, I hope they nail it on that one. I'm got my fingers crossed, but that's coming
yeah,
out
hopefully,
this week.
Because like Guardians of the Galaxy, the soundtrack for that mm-hmm. was phenomenal. Again, they didn't mute it at all. It was
right
up front. And
well, same with the Iron Man and AC/DC.
Yep.
Right. Yep, exactly. Same thing. It's like you love that stuff. I mean, it just really rocked in your room and you're like, oh, this is good. And it adds to the then you add in the sound effects of stuff right. whooshing by and everything. And it added to the entire thing. And that's what made that. Yeah. Yeah. I forgot about that. The Who playing in yep. Maverick. So good. Ah, great stuff. Look at
it
that.
Is.
Awesome. Awesome. Oh, and then what else? True Romance. Do you remember him in True Romance?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was his.
It was Elvis.
Name? I thought he was his roommate.
No, that was Brad Pitt.
Oh, that was Brad Pitt. Sorry.
Brad yep. Pitt was the one that was always high on the couch. And yeah. didn't know what yeah, the hell he was right. doing. Yeah. No. Yeah. He played. He played Elvis. Remember? Because it was like, that was, what the heck was his name? I forget what his character's name was in the movie, Christian Slater. But he always looked up to Elvis. And that's when he imagined Elvis, it was actually, yep. it was Val him. Kilmer, like, he,
yep.
and he was playing Elvis, which I thought was really cool.
It's funny, because I just bought Heat when yeah. I was doing all this stuff. So I bought that in UHD. Oh, I think I responded to that, where I thought it looked good. I mean,
yeah,
I know everyone said it looked muted or whatever, but
it's the style you know. Choice. It's totally a style choice. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. I mean, and like we've said, we've compared it to Ambulance and it's like two different movies.
Which I haven't seen Ambulance either. Oh. So I know you guys keep talking about it and I should see it, but
up until Maverick, that was pretty much the dynamic disc of the year. I would say yeah. before that, I still would have voted for the Batman as my disc of my movie of the year. But not to give anything away, I'm like, who wasn't vote? I can't even imagine something that's gonna in the next few months that's gonna be better than Maverick on disc.
I can't either. Right now, I would think Maverick for me, Maverick, and then the Batman.
Yeah, I actually watched some of the Batman the other night too. it just went back to it, and I'm like, it is, it's just gorgeous. It's so different. Go from Maverick to the Batman.
They're total opposite.
Total opposite, but still, it's beautiful, and the sound is just incredible, and it's
and again, listening to Kurt Cobain sing in the Batman. You know, it's right up front, and it sounds great.
Yeah. Yeah, I love how they mixed that, it's part of the movie. It's like it's actually telling the story of the movie as well. It's like that's why I said, I'm like, that's just, it's the Batman is just such a piece of art made from a comic book, but yet a blockbuster movie. It's just it encompasses all of that. And then to me, like, Maverick is just how blockbusters should be done. It's just the definition of a blockbuster movie. And it, you can't make that movie without making Top Gun first, because you're pulling at the heartstrings, but you're so good.
And don't get me wrong, I love Marvel, but it's nice to see another movie that's not a Marvel movie like Maverick that is as good, if not better, than a Marvel movie. I know they're different styles, but still, the quality.
Right. But then it's funny, because then you'll have people that'll say, like, why do they have to just keep making blockbuster movies? Why can't they? Well, and I've seen
less blockbuster movies.
Well, no, but think about that on its face. Work that question through. They're not making a blockbuster movie. We turn it into it by buying the tickets for it.
Right.
So people are complaining that they're making this certain type of movie that everybody goes to. Why do they keep doing that?
Why would you
because
stop?
Because everybody keeps going. But I like this kind of movie. Okay, that's fine. But not everybody goes to those. Right. So they're going to put those on streaming platforms. But then they're like, well, why? If they just stop making this... Right? Like, if you stop making blockbusters like Top Gun, that will allow my other movie to flourish. It's not like all the people going to Blockbuster or just Blockbuster movies are like, well, I got this movie ticket money in my hand. I might as well go see, like, I don't know, name the movie. Name another artsy movie, which I do like those. But don't get me wrong. I'm like... It's funny, like, they think that if one goes away, then theirs will be the only one in the theater.
Right.
It's like, why do they keep making them? They don't make them blockbusters. They turn into it when we buy enough tickets to call it a blockbuster.
Right.
So.
Which, speaking of movie, I don't know if you went and saw this on Nope.
I haven't seen that. How was it?
I thought it was good.
Really? I was waiting for that one decent. On theater. I think I have it. They have it as a premium rental right now on Kaleidoscape. So I was probably just going to wait to buy it, because I don't want to pay $20 to rent it when I can just wait and buy it for like $24 or something.
You know, it was different. I thought it was a well-made movie.
Really? Okay. Cause I've been waiting to hear some reviews on it, because I wasn't too enamored with the trailer. Like, I saw a bunch of trailers for it early on in the spring when I was going for Maverick, Jurassic, blah, blah, blah. And every time I saw a trailer, I saw like a different version of the movie. Like, it looked like a horror movie. It looked like a dancing movie. It looked like this, looked like that. I'm like, what the heck is going
on?
It
has all that in there.
Yeah, I know.
It just has all of that.
Yeah, but each, I'm like, which is it? So I didn't know which way. I'm like, am I going to like this? So I wanted to hear some reviews on it before I decided on buying it or not. I have heard good things. You're along with yourself, I've heard some good things, so I'll probably end up just buying it. I don't want to rent it for $20. I'd rather purchase it for, I'd rather buy it for 30 than rent it for 20.
Right.
So
you said that Love and Thunder was coming out this week. Is that what it is?
I think it is. I think it's coming out on digital on Tuesday.
I thought it was pretty good. I thought that was a good movie too.
I enjoyed it. Steve George and then did not.
Right. I was just gonna say, after listening to Steve George, I thought he had some good points there. I didn't like how Zeus was played. Just
Yeah. Yeah.
That's how it goes. I mean,
yeah, it says coming out September 8th. So what's September 8th?
5 days from here.
So that would be, where's my calendar? On Thursday. Disney Day. Disney Plus Day, I think, that arrives on September 8th. So hopefully by Thursday we'll have it on Kaleidoscape. Usually when things drop on Disney Plus, Kaleidoscape gets them too. So hopefully I'll get that then. And then I want to say it's the 23rd drops on disc this month. Pretty sure.
I mean, I think I'm going to buy that because I enjoyed it. I thought, you know, it was pretty good. Lots of laughs in it.
Laughs. I thought the beginning was a little slow. I thought the Guardians of the Galaxy stuff could have been, that wasn't really necessary. It was a little bit of like
a filler type thing.
Yeah, it felt like that. But I think as a home theater thing, I'm like, this thing's going to look awesome. I mean, the vibrancy on this should be through the roof, you know, and even that opening scene with Christian Bale and all of that, and then going into the rest of, and then you, I don't want to get into stories for people that haven't seen it, but this should be a very dynamic movie, both in sound and picture, and the story is too. And that's what I kind of liked about it. And Steve and I talked about it a little bit, but I'm looking forward to that one a lot. So we'll see. We will see. All right. You got anything else? We've been going quite a bit.
No. Yeah, I think that's about it. Gonna make sure I watch Hunter Killer.
Yeah. There you go. And let me know what you think.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Well, that'll do it then. Dan, thank you very much for stepping up like this. Really appreciate it.
Anytime, just let me know if you need someone to fill in or.
Filling in, so yeah. No, thank you very much. And as we get a rainy day, we'll be getting together again soon.
Okay.
Thanks everybody for listening. We'll be back on Friday. I don't know what we're featuring. I have no idea. We'll pick something. But I don't know.
Featuring DJ and John.
DJ and John talking scenes. The sights, the sounds, the scenes. Or as John says, the sights. Scenes. All right. Thanks, everybody. I'll see you on Friday. Go push play. Hey, Fred.
This has been a Hey, Fred production with theme music by Jeff Bernhardt and Throne Vault Productions.